Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to Action Radio. This is Greg Penglis coming to you from the historic district of downtown Milton on the banks of the beautiful Blackwater River. And now let's get into Action Radio. Well, I have to tell you something about Fridays that is just a little bit crazy because it's an hour earlier and I had an hour, well, the Thursday show is a little bit later so that we can get all our folks in, particularly Dr. Judy Mikovits, who calls in. We are so fortunate. I can't tell you how fortunate we are to be able to have someone like Judy Mikovits for 3 hours, you know, every week. I mean, she's not, well, she's got conferences and things like that, but when she's not saving the planet somewhere, you know, she's here. And it's just incredible to be able to do this. So we have this rare privilege. We have her. Yesterday, we had Dr. Brian Artis. We have Dr. Jim Thorpe. We have our data expert, John Cullen. It's not our data expert. He's his own data. Anyway, point being, he was one that made the COVID map for Johns Hopkins University. And so we have these just amazing people that come here to Action Radio. And it is such a privilege to be able to talk to them. And it's kind of fun because, you know, they look at what we do here and say, I can't believe you do this. You write legislation. You found a way to, you know, have people share it and share the links and get bills. You know, it's like, I'm like, oh, that's not such a big deal. I said, and you guys are doctors and you do this and you save people. And ah, yeah, it's okay. You know, so everybody, we tend to look at our stuff as like, it's not that, you know, great. I mean, anybody can do this with hard work and, you know, dedication, luck, and a little bit of whatever else it takes to do stuff. But it's just fascinating how that works. Anyway, so there's going to be a little bit of history made, I think, next week. And there's a conference. It's called the Gateway. I'm going to bring up my old thing here on it now. The Gateway to Medical Freedom Convention in St. Louis. And it's put on by Dr. Molly James and the James Clinic. And they're up somewhere, I think it's, what's this? Collinsville. That's what it's called, Collinsville, Illinois. And so we're going to talk. I'm going to hopefully get Molly back on the show. She's been on the show. She's been on the show individually. She's been with the doctors panel. Fabulous person. All these doctors, Dr. Angie or Angelina Farella, who was on yesterday for the first time. I met her at the Pensacola rally months ago, you know, the Medical Freedom Rally here. We have, like I said, our usual folks, Micah's artist, Thorpe. John was with us for a little bit of time, but then he had to do some international interviews, so he had to leave us partway through the show. But that's how it works. People come, people go. You know, they join in and they leave. And these people are busy. They're doing their practice. They have appointments, and they come back and talk to us. It's just incredible how it all works. Now, here's the big news, okay? This is what makes this so exciting, is that the two, especially Dr. Angie Farella and Dr. Brian Artis, are going to be presenting citizen legislation at this conference. And so I don't know if they're going to be able to do workshops. I mean, I want to do this myself. As soon as I, you know, get invites, you know, and can go, I'm going to do, I want to be at these conferences too. And they don't think of inviting a citizen legislator, you know, to a medical conference. But when you think about it, how else are you going to change the laws if we don't do it ourselves? You know, nothing's going to happen until we put the bills before the public puts the bills before the media, and the media puts the bills to Congress and says, well, what are you going to do about this? You know, and so that's how it works. And so, which is the opposite of the current system, which is the special interests, the corporations, the government organizations, the non-government organizations, you know, all the weirdos, wackos, you know, fanatics and other people out there, they write the bills and they pay millions of dollars, billions of dollars to have them put into Congress and passed. And then it goes through, you know, the current coup occupant of the White House, the moronic coup leader of the real insurrection. And then it gets to the regulatory agencies, and then it's forced on us. You know, and so this is how it works. But I want to reverse that. I want us to write the bills that we consent to be governed by, send the bills from us to the, you know, all the people. The people share them to the media starts reporting on it finally. The pollsters take polls on it, and it gets to Congress, and they finally vote on something good. Rather than this, you know, horse, you know, stuff, these horse feathers bills that are coming out, these, you know, 2,000 pages of inflation is what it is. And they tell you the you know, the Inflation Reduction Act. Well, the only thing they're reducing is our economic survival. That's what's being reduced. We should call it the Treasury Reduction Act or the Economic Reduction Act or the Wealth Reduction Act. But it's not reducing inflation. It's doing anything but. And so we have bills to fix that. I mean, our bill, the Constitutional Amendment, you know, to remove the power of Congress to borrow money, would take care of that. You'd never have to worry about inflation again, because you only have inflation when the government spends money, which means they have to borrow money, which is money they don't have, right? That's why they borrow it, right? So they're borrowing on the future. In fact, I'm going to talk to a couple of our, we have a couple of younger folks coming on the show today. We have Amber Kemper, who's our regular Constitution reporter. She'll be on at 8 o'clock. So that's 2 hours from now. And we have a new person, Brianna Cannon. And Brianna is another bill writer from this Patriot Academy that goes on in Texas. She wrote a bill on adoption. And so we're going to hear from those two as well. Younger folks, right? They're the ones that are going to be stuck with this bill. You know, the bill, not the bill that they're writing, but the bill for the money that these people in Congress are spending now. I mean, Nancy Pelosi is not going to be around to see the consequences of the $30 trillion that she's, you know, forcing upon the kids that are going to be calling the show later today, our younger folks, our young adults, you know, and, well, they're like kids. It's kind of funny. But they're fabulous, and I'm really impressed with some of the folks in the younger generation, and that's why they get opportunities on Action Radio. You know, I mean, I don't care about age. I don't care about your background. I don't care where you're from. I don't care your level of education. I don't care anything. I just want to know where your heart and brain is. You know, if your heart's in the right place, if you love this country, if your brain's in the right place, you know, you've got some intelligence and you're not afraid to use it. You can be on the show. You know, Amber went from writing a bill. I mean, I didn't know who she was. She just sends a bill in to writeyourlaws.com, WriteYourLaws. I didn't know how old she was. I didn't know it. I knew she was a high school kid, which she's graduated now. But at the time, she was still in high school. So she sends in this bill say that anybody who's running for elective office and those already in, the incumbents, have to take the immigration citizenship test that anybody has to take, you know, to become a citizen of the United States. Well, I thought that was a really good idea. So I emailed her back and said, why don't you come on the show? You know, he said, we work schedules back and forth and we figured out a time that that worked for both of us. And she comes on the show. Well, that's when I found out she's, you know, a young adult, you know, and now she is an adult. She's 18 now. But I didn't know, but it didn't matter because she's brilliant. You know, she's really talented and she's really smart. And the fact she's a young adult is irrelevant. I say it because it's interesting, because you don't find many 18-year-olds writing legislation. You just don't, but you do on Action Radio. And those are the kind of folks that are gravitating here. The other extreme, Tina Terry, 75 years old. You know, she's an English professor specializing in Orwell in 1984. That's her specialty, language. You know, she's the other end of the spectrum. So I should really do? Now that I think about it, I got to get those two together. I got to get Tina and Amber on the same show. I've run out of notepad. A notebook. You know, I have one of these three subject spiral things. I ran out of paper yesterday. I forgot to buy another one. So I'm going to put a little to-do notes, you know, so I'm going to see if I can get to, well, the problem is Amber's going to start even earlier. I want to get Amber and Tina on the same show. That should be fun. Okay. So that's going to happen later on today. Same show. As for this medical conference. Okay. So let me get back to that. Here's where it gets interesting. Because Dr. Brian Artis and Dr. Angie Farella are going to be lobbyists. They are going to take our two bills that are the most important right now, and that would be the vaccine product liability bill. And that's what Angie's most interested in, is putting liability back on vaccine makers. We talked about that yesterday, how that happened and how it happened during the Reagan administration, and how, you know, this is on the show yesterday, our wonderful doctors panel, which airs live 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. Central Time. On Thursday. So it's podcast. Of course, podcasts, you can listen to it anytime. But we talked about, you know, how they thought at the time that they needed to promote, you know, the industry, and they made it easier for vaccine makers to raise money so they could do research, so they could put vaccines on the market. Well, it was a bunch of, you know, horse feathers again, right? I said, why didn't they just get a grant like everybody else does? Why didn't they, you know, fund university research projects? Why didn't they get a tax deduction? If they really need money, why didn't they just raise their prices a little bit? You know, they're huge. Big Pharma is massive. They could, you know, why didn't they take the money from other places? You know, so I had like five different places they could have raised money inside of 30 seconds. And that never came up during the debate in the 80s. It's like, whoa, we have to get rid of liability. Well, why would you get rid of liability for any industry? Your local donut shop has more liability than Big Pharma. You know, if you find, you know, frogs crawling your donuts, I know that's a disgusting thought, but it does make a point. You know, you're going to take your donuts back. Excuse me, there are small frogs in my donuts. You know, they're not supposed to be there. Okay, it's not donut home. You know, and they're going to have liability for that. They're going to have to give you more donuts, which you may or may not want. You know, pay you a ridiculous amount of money if you take it to a lawsuit. But they're liable for that. They are liable means responsible. They are responsible for the consequences. Well, Big Pharma is not responsible for anything, especially during an emergency use authorization. Well, that's criminally wrong. You know, it's like doctors who aren't responsible because they're not subject to malpractice. Would you go to a doctor who's not subject to malpractice? I wouldn't, because I want that liability hanging over their heads if they screw up. Not that I want them to screw up, and not that I, you know, look for doctors that screw up. I mean, nobody does. I'm making a point by being absurd. But the point is, would you go to a doctor that said, you know, proudly immune from all liability? You know, come here, appointment's available. I wouldn't go. I don't know anybody who would. Why would you go to a doctor that has no liability? That makes no sense. But yet people take snake oil jabs. They take, the COVID injury shot, the genetic, you know, manipulation shot from Big Pharma, knowing full well that they have no liability for what they're doing. They're injecting stuff directly into your body that they are not responsible for. That alone should tell you this is a problem. And so that's one bill. The other bill that goes along with that is the bill that gets rid of censorship for big tech. And I fixed that in about six lines. I kept the thing where they are immune from liability for anything that anybody else posts. And this actually makes sense. So you want to do that. That's so that they can't restrict anything you post. But Congress, in their infinite stupidity, gave big tech not only the ability to be immune from anything that anybody posts, they're also responsible for what anybody posts, and they're allowed to police the internet. That was wrong. That was wrong because, A, they didn't have to, because anything that shouldn't be there is already covered by obscenity laws, child pornography laws, things like that. So there's no reason to make big tech into a law enforcement entity, and you don't have to make something illegal twice. If it's illegal once, it's illegal. So there's no reason ever to give big tech that. But what they did was they had this Good Samaritan clause, which says in good faith, you know, if big tech finds something there that is otherwise objectionable. They gave this long list: lewd, lascivious, graphically violent, sexually explicit, yada, yada, yada. And then it says, or otherwise objectionable. Well, big tech has said, well, we find conservatives objectionable, so we're going to censor them. And that's legal. That's legal under the law right now because Congress was stupid. Or they were bribed, in which case they were also stupid. So Congress is bribed to giving big tech the ability to regulate conservatives and anything they don't like and restrict freedom of information. You know, what killed most people with COVID was not COVID. It was the lack of knowledge of early treatments: ivermectin, hydroxychloroquine, vitamin D3, vitamin C, zinc, the Zelenko protocol. My dear friend who's not here, he's left us, you know, he's gone to heaven and is no longer part of us, but his reputation, his knowledge, his bill that he wrote for Action Radio, that lives on. You know, so these things are still happening here. So, you know, I figure the two people I've lost that really have upset me, Dr. Zelenko is one. And I have his bill, and we have his interviews, and, you know, he was just an amazing person. And the other one is my webmaster, Eric Colley, who was killed by the hospitals. You know, everything that happens at Action Radio, every bill that goes through writeyourlaws.com, the credit goes to Eric Colley, because he's the one that created the website that allows us to be citizen advocates and citizen legislators. And then the hospitals killed him, and I'm still upset over that, because there was no reason for it. I understand people die of natural causes. Everybody dies of something someday. That's normal. We accept that. That's part of the condition of being here. What's not part of the condition of being here is being killed by your hospital. So we're going to do something about it. So this conference, I'm hoping to make the first conference where they actually offer solutions rather than just complain about the problems. We know what the problems are. Everybody knows. Anybody who knows anything about COVID knows that the problem is government, censorship from big tech, and no liability on big pharma. Well, we can't fix government completely, but we can put liability on big pharma, and we can take away the ability of big tech to censor. And the way you handle big tech is very simple. We have a bill that says that they are immune from liability for anything that anybody else posts. In other words, the users. They're called computer interactive services, which means they have a provider and a user. So a search engine is an interactive computer service. The provider, usually Google, unfortunately. I have DuckDuckGo, but I hear that's not as good anymore. So they're the provider of search engines and the providers of social media: Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, you know, all those folks. That's social media. We all know what that is, right? So the providers are the people that actually provide the service so that we can use it. We're the users. We're the ones that go on Twitter and go on Instagram and go on Snapchat and go on Facebook and do all those. We're the users, okay? So what we post, the providers are immune from. So if somebody posts something that's criminal, let's take the worst case example, child pornography. Someone posts child pornography on Facebook. Well, Facebook's not responsible for that. The person that posted is, and then hopefully they're going to get arrested, you know, amazingly quickly, which they should be because, you know, I mean, Facebook can alert law enforcement. I don't care about that. But what Facebook cannot do is be the police force. They can't regulate and take stuff off arbitrarily that they want, because that's how they censor conservatives. Well, it's good faith. We found it objectionable. We did a fact check, and we found that ivermectin, you know, doesn't cure COVID. Well, that's impossible, first of all, because it does. But secondly, that's part of their agenda. So they, in other words, they make their agenda, you know, the rules. And you can't do that either. This is a free country. We have free speech. And people say, well, they're a private company. Well, it's nonsense. Yeah, they're privately owned, but they're not a private company. They're open to the public. You know, in the same way that restaurants, you know, in segregation couldn't say, well, it's a private, this is a private restaurant. We only want to serve white people. Well, you can't do that because you're open to the public. It's called public accommodation. Well, in the same way, social media can't say, well, we're a private company. We're only open to liberals and leftists and radicals. Anyway, we're not, we don't serve conservatives here. We have a big sign, you know, on the Facebook door, you know, conservatives not welcome. They can't do that because they're open to the public. It's called public accommodation. It's part of the civil rights laws. So anybody that says, well, they're a private company, they can censor conservatives, it's a bunch of BS. No, they can't, because they're open to the public. They have to serve everybody, which is distinguished from the, you know, because if it's a regular part of what they offer, they have to serve you. You know, and if you say, for example, you walk into a pizza place and you order sushi, and the pizza owner says, well, we don't make sushi. We're a pizza place. And you demand sushi. Well, you don't have the right to do that because they're a pizza place. That's just stupid. In the same way, if you go to a Christian baker, you know, and you ask for a gay wedding cake, and they say, well, we don't make gay wedding cakes. Well, you don't have a claim because they don't, it's not that they're not making for that particular customer. They don't make them. So you can't demand that a retailer or a restaurant or something, you know, make a product that they don't make. That's not, that doesn't come under public accommodation because they don't make it for anybody. So it's not that they're not discriminating. They're just saying that we don't make gay wedding cakes. We make, you know, this is a Christian company. We make Christian wedding cakes. Okay, fine. You know, if I go to a Muslim bakery, you know, and I ask for hot cross buns for Easter, what do you think is going to happen? Can I claim discrimination? No, because they're a Muslim bakery. They don't make hot cross buns for Easter. Okay? So that's the distinction. And once you get these distinctions in your mind, it makes sense. Now, can big tech say that because they're open to the public as a social media, you know, this is a group activity, right? Can they say, well, we don't want conservatives because we don't think they're social. You know, we don't like their ideology. We find them otherwise objectionable, as it says in Section 230 of the Communications Decency Act. Well, they can't say that because they're open to the public. They offer a social media product. They offer search engines to the public. They cannot discriminate. They can't put the conservative ones on page 8 and the leftist ones on page 1. Not in my bill. They can't do that because that goes against public accommodation and it goes against my bill. The bill is very simple. It says that big tech is immune from liability for what a user posts. The providers are immune from what the users post. Okay? Unless, and here's the, it's conditional. So this is why this is self-regulating. This is why you don't need the bureaucracy. You don't need any trust laws. You don't need regulation. You don't need a new department. You don't have to spend money. Most of my bills, there's no money involved. In fact, usually money comes back. So what I say to big tech in the bill is, okay, you're immune from anything that anybody posts, provided you don't touch anything that anybody posts. So they're immune. They maintain their immunity by leaving the users alone. I mean, completely alone. And the bill says, you know, that big tech shall lose their liability immunity if they touch in any way, however minuscule, most of the words in the bill, anything anybody posts, anybody's account, or any arrangement of the search engine results beyond the raw number of hits. So if they change the search engine results with algorithms or manipulation, if they close or limit or shadow ban or do anything, however minuscule, to anybody's account, if they close, censor, regulate, fact check, limit in any way anything anybody posts, they lose their immunity. You can sue their asses. Well, that makes it self-regulating. Now, here's the funny part, though. I've tried to call the national trial lawyers for, I don't know, 2 or 3 months now. You would think the trial lawyers would want the billions of dollars they're going to get from big tech and the billions and billions of dollars they'd get from big pharma, from liability loss. You'd think they would, but they haven't. You know, I've emailed the directors. I've called them several times. I've left messages. First of all, I want their help. If I get the national trial lawyers behind this, you know, that will propel those bills to the top of the national debate. But the fact that the national trial lawyers, that's you guys up in Alabama there. Yeah, I'm talking to you right now. You know, the fact that they have said nothing, that they've refused to, well, not refused, but they just, you know, they haven't communicated with me at all. And I've talked to them. I've talked to their operators. They're nice people. you know, but they don't get back to me. You would think they would have the brains and the vision to take the multi-billion dollar opportunity that I'm dropping right in their laps to maybe support Action Radio a little bit. But no, they haven't thought of it. They don't know. They don't care. It's like, you idiots. I mean, how much did you make off the cigarette liability lawsuits? Billions. You know, cigarette companies paid a billion, and they should have, because they killed people. You know, cigarettes are a product that, when used as directed, kills people. You know, these non-vaccines, when used as directed, when used properly, when used according to the administrative stuff, the inserts and all that, when used as directed, kill people. Well, they're liable for that. Well, they won't be until we get this bill out there. See, that's the difference. We're not making up frivolous stuff. You know, it's like the woman that burned herself because she put coffee, you know, between her legs, and then the coffee spilled. Well, that's your fault. You know, legs are not coffee holders. That's just insane. You know, you have a coffee holder in your car. You have a cup holder. That's what the cup holder is for. The cup holder is to hold cups. If you're stupid enough to put it in your lap, that's your fault. It's not McDonald's fault. All they're responsible for is brewing the coffee. So if there's nothing wrong with the coffee, well, I don't drink McDonald's coffee anyway because it comes out of a weird machine. You know, I don't know what's in that machine or when the last time they cleaned it. So no, I don't, you know, I don't like, you know, drinks from a machine. Thank you very much. Anyway, I put my own water through a filter. But the point of all this is that they're liable, you know, for what they produce. They're not liable for what they don't do. If you, you know, it's like firearms. If you take a firearm and you're cleaning it and you forget to unload it and you shoot yourself, that's your problem. You know, if the firearm goes off when it's not supposed to, you know, without the trigger being pulled, then it's the manufacturer's fault. You know, so assessing liability is one of these critical things. But anyway, I don't understand why the trial lawyers do not want to take up the multi-billion dollar gift I dropped in their lap. You know, and hopefully they'll support Action Radio a little bit, you would think. So let's get back to this Gateway Conference. So my two favorite doctors from the panel that are going to be legislators tomorrow, and all those doctors are my favorites. I'm not trying to single anybody out. Dr. Brian Artis and Dr. Angie Farella are going to be lobbyists. They're going to be presenting our bill, hopefully in workshops, hopefully in speeches, hopefully to media. I mean, I don't know. I mean, we might find out next week. The conference is during our regular chat. So what I'm probably going to do, I'm going to ask everybody if they want to do a show next week or they just want to attend the conference. If they want to do the show next week, then hopefully they'll call in from the conference and we'll get live coverage. If it's live streamed, it might not be as essential. So we may or may not have a doctor show next week. I might just do a regular show. I need the time. You know, anyway, so Gateway to Medical Freedom Convention coming to St. Louis area. This is from 97.1 FM Talk. I'm going to talk to our folks and see if they can get interviewed on the air about citizen legislation. It says Mark Cox, I guess he's one of their people, spoke with Dr. Renata Moon, pediatric hospitalist. I didn't know hospitalist was a noun. Anyway, about the upcoming Gateway to Medical Freedom Conference that is coming to the Collinsville, Illinois Gateway Convention Center. I guess now I know where the name comes from. August 25th through 27th. That's next Thursday through Saturday. Yep. Okay. Dr. Moon. This is a great name, Dr. Moon. What if they had a Dr. Sun? Dr. Sun and Dr. Moon. Dr. Howard, Dr. Fine, Dr. Howard. If you're old enough to know what I just said, then you better start jogging and get in shape. All right. Dr. Moon says that they want to focus on exploring medical freedom across the country, including adult issues. I'm not sure what those are. Pediatric issues. So those are kids. And what's happening in the military. Oh, well, we talk about that with Captain Tom Stewart. Every Wednesday at 9 a.m. Central Time, Captain Tom Stewart, one of the most recognizable figures in the country today for having been kicked out of the military unjustly for refusing to take an illegal product. What do you mean illegal product, Greg? It's a COVID shot. It's mandated by the government. No, it's not. It's illegal. It's experimental. The military cannot take experimental drugs. In fact, nobody can unless there's a declaration of emergency, which effort, incidentally, is old. It's probably expired already. Apparently, those are supposed to come up. This is what Dr. Frella told me, that these emergency use authorizations have to be reviewed by Congress every 6 months. They can't just be signed by the president or whatever you call the person sitting in the White House right now. I need to focus on that. I need to look into this. Anyway, so we'll figure out next week what we're going to do. That's going to be interesting. And so if you want to do something about this, I'll post these bills in our Center for Citizen Legislation. It's on Facebook page, our Citizen Legislation page. But the easiest thing to do for anybody that wants to find out these bills and copy the links, send them to your friends and family, tell them to do the same, send them to media, talk shows, any media you can think of, and send them to your members of Congress, your representative, and your two senators. And if everybody does that, we get several million links to these two bills, in Congress and media, and friends and family send millions more to Congress and media, we start a political movement. They will have no choice but to address it. The media is going to report on it. Once the media reports on it, well, they're going to say, they're going to go up, Congressman, you know, foot and mouth, representing the great state of Fredonia. You know, how do you feel about this bill? What bill? Well, the bill to put product liability on vaccine makers. Oh, I haven't heard about that bill. Well, we have. How come you haven't heard of it? Well, I don't know. I've been busy, you know, taking money from graft and corruption. I've been busy, you know, going to Jamaica on free trips from, you know, from Big Pharma. Oh, that's nice. Well, incidentally, it's funny you should mention that, Congressman, you know, foot and mouth from Fredonia, you know, because this bill would take away liability immunity. That means that Big Pharma would be liable for vaccines. Well, you can't do that. Why not? Everybody else is liable. Well, I don't know. You can't do that. Why not? Well, they said we can't do that. Who said? Big Pharma. Wait, you taking orders from Big Pharma now? No. We just we have a interest in promoting you know, products that are safe and effective. Well, then why are you helping Big Pharma? You know, I mean, if I was the reporter, that's how the dialogue would go. It would be one of those kind of conversations. But enough people sending enough links to our bills to enough other people, enough media, and enough people to get this to Congress, sooner or later, someone's going to start asking questions. Now, here's the fun part. We don't know what's going to happen. We have no idea because no one's ever done this before. No one's ever written bills and sent them to Congress in mass numbers. No one anywhere in the world has done this. People, you know, they protest in the streets, they yell and scream, they write letters, they try and get elected to office, they do everything, but no one's ever thought to have an entire population write bills that we consent to be governed by. This has never happened before. You know, why I was blessed with this idea popping into my head, you know, several years ago, I have no idea, but I'm stuck with it. I, you know, you're not, I am. I'm kind of stuck with this thing, so this is why I do it. So that's the Gateway to Medical Freedom Convention. So I'm going to be holding, you know, off the air, obviously, legislative workshops with my favorite doctors to turn them into expert lobbyists and advocates. And so they can teach other people how to do this and so on and so on and so on. And pretty soon we're going to have this amazing crew of lobbyists across the country. You know, doctors are going to be lobbyists, you know, all kinds of folks are going to be lobbyists. Our gun people. Gun people are used to being lobbyists. But don't take lessons from the NRA because the NRA is nothing but a fundraising organization for the NRA. Give us money. Why? Because we need money. What are you going to do with it? We're going to keep it and spend it on us. Heritage Foundation is the same thing. They're another fundraising organization for themselves. Give us money. We're going to fight for conservatives. How? Big lunches. Oh, really? Yeah, we're going to have guest speakers and big lunches. Luncheons. You know, if I could get the money from, I don't know, a week's worth of Heritage luncheons, I'd have the biggest PR campaign in the country. Because, you know, we're not a huge organization, but we're going to be. And this is where it gets really fun. I meant to do a bunch of articles today. I never got to any of them. Let me announce another thing, too. A friend of mine and I have been chatting. Actually, we talked for the first time yesterday for hours, literally. And Heather Strickland's going to be doing the new we didn't know what to call a report. She's a diet person. She's written a book, so like keto, but she also incorporates a lot of humor into it. So it's like if you combine comedy and nutrition, you get Heather Strickland. And so we didn't know what to call a report. And I said, you know, just talking to you, it's like spontaneous combustion. She says, yeah, I like that. I said, I do too. So we now have the spontaneous combustion report. All right. So that's going to start Monday at 9 o'clock. So we have the very authoritative, very serious Jonathan Mosley with the legal report, followed by, I have no idea what's going to happen, Heather Strickland and the spontaneous combustion report. Oh, I can't wait to make the theme for that one. That's going to be hysterical. So there we are. So that's what's going on. We're going to make history. We have an ally in A.J. Rice, who's like the consummate political insider in Washington. He's the PR guy. All roads go through his PR firm, Publius. And so he's helping us out. He's connecting us with all kinds of people who I won't tell you about just yet, but he is. So he's connecting us up. We've got our doctors who are going to be lobbyists. We've got a medical convention for the first time where they're actually going to be presenting solutions. All these wonderful things are happening. And we got a new spontaneous combustion report starting Monday. I mean, how do you beat that? I mean, it's just all these incredible things are happening in Action Radio. And so we are soon to explore. We got a new logo too. So if you haven't seen it yet, you will. It's on my Facebook page. It's on the Action Radio with Greg Penglis Facebook page. I'm going to put it everywhere and everything is going to be great. Anyway, got Shirley Watchell, excuse me, Shirley. I'll get your name right someday, with DC Guns, report. I've got DC Guns on my thing here. DC Project Women and Guns. Oh, get it. It's Friday. I'm not responsible for what I say on Friday.
When one is faced with a crisis, you find your true character. how you react to such an emergency can determine the rest of your life. Two paths present themselves for you to choose. One leads to tragedy. The other leads to becoming a new person. Shirley Wattrall, a survivor of a dangerously abusive relationship, is that new person. She is the author of Heels to Holster. She is a firearms instructor, motivational speaker, women's empowerment advocate, and a reporter for Action Radio. So now, here is the DC Project, Women and Guns, with Shirley Wattrall.
You know, I used to do my report at 6 o'clock all the time, and I was ready for it. But because there's only one left at 6 o'clock Fridays, it totally throws me off. You know, everything's late. I get my Facebook stuff out late. I get the show title done late. Everything's just late. I'm late. But I'm good that you're not. In fact, you recovered from me one day when I slept through part of the show. It was so embarrassing.
I remember that. Good morning. How you doing? Apparently you're late. I didn't think you were late. But were you late?
No, I was not today. No, yesterday was a crazy day. We have a new reporter, Heather Strickland, starting the spontaneous combustion report because we didn't know what else to call it. You know, she's just... Well, we were talking yesterday, and we covered so many different subjects. I said, I'm just going to make you a general reporter. Just come on the show. I got to have you on. You're hysterical. And so she's like she's a book author. She wrote a book, you know, keto. She's like the rebel keto person. You know, how do you be a rebel with diets? I mean, I don't know, but we're going to find out. Anyway, so that's how she's like the verbal volcano. So that's her other title. So we came up with all these superlatives. So that's going to be fun. That's a little housekeeping note.
That's another new term, verbal volcano. Okay.
Yeah, I made that one.
I got to write that one down.
Verbal volcano, yeah. So that's Heather. She's the verbal volcano, and the report is the spontaneous combustion report. That should get people going. I have to get my sound effects for that one. I'll have to have some kind of massive, you know, kind of thing. And now the spontaneous combustion report. Yeah, yeah. So I'll get my sound effects, and I produce all this stuff anyway. But the other good news for you, and for all of us, Amber Kemper is now going to college. You know, she just graduated high school this year, and she's our Constitution reporter. Because of her schedule, we're moving here to 6 in the morning. So she's going to be right before you. And so interesting.
That's awesome.
She's amazing. She's 18. She's bringing on another guest from the Patriot Academy, another bill writer, Brianna Cannon from Oklahoma, who wrote a bill on adoption for this wonderful organization, which we're going to get them on too. Anyway, so if you want to join our young adults, the future of this country, then please feel free. She's going to be going to school in Florida. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. So, yeah, that's awesome when our young people are getting involved in America, in the Constitution, because right now it seems like the majority of them aren't even paying attention other than kicking and screaming and trying to get what they want for nothing. But, no, that's awesome. Yeah, love that.
I do too, and this is why I like providing opportunities. You know, when I see genius, when I see effort, when I see, you know, someone that loves the country, you're on the show. I don't care if you're 18. You know, I don't care if you're. And the other extreme is Tina Terry, who's 75. You know, I think she still teaches aerobics, but I'm not sure. You know, and she's the other end of the spectrum.
That's awesome.
Well, I want to get them together. I want to get the two of them together on the same show. That's a goal. But Tina's in Arizona. Yeah, Tina's in Arizona though, so it's a little bit tougher just because of the time difference, 2 hours behind. So that's kind of early, especially if Amber's on early. But so that's what's going on. Things are changing daily, and I've got doctors who are going to be lobbyists. Are going to present, you know, a bunch of bills, two in particular, at this medical conference next week. And this might be the first time that citizen legislation is publicly offered to media and government in a conference. So we're making history all over.
You are. You're just moving forward like a bull in a china shop, which is cool. You keep going.
Exactly. And now for the bull in the china shop report with Shirley Wattrall.
All right. So let's start off. We're going to start off with our events, because what I'd like to do, so I don't get carried away on something else and not tell you what's going on with DC Project.
Who ever gets carried away on this show? I mean, we're logical. We're organized. We always stick to format. You know how it goes.
Exactly, but you know, just in case that one day comes. As I've said in the past few Fridays, the DC Project, Women for Gun Rights, we are a nationwide group of women fighting to support our Second Amendment. So we are going to, once a year, we go to Washington, D.C., meet with our legislators, put a face to the women that are defending the Second Amendment, we haven't been able to do that for a couple of years. So this is the first time in 2 years that we could go because, you know, Washington, D.C. was locked down. Mm-hmm. This is my first year going, which I'm pretty excited about.
I am too.
So we are having, I know this is kind of a nervous but exciting event.
No, don't be nervous. They're just people too. Look, you're talking to potentially 70 different countries right now. Are you nervous?
Well, now you put it that way. you and Jim are like, okay, thanks a lot for doing that. Appreciate that.
So if you weren't nervous, you are now.
Yeah,
okay, fine.
You're right. That's true. And lots of times I'm told we won't actually speak to a legislator, but the aides are just as important. So we will be speaking with them as well. I'm working on setting up appointments, so we'll see how that all goes. But we do have a rally if you're in Washington, D.C. on September 16th at the Capitol grounds from 1 to 4. We will be rallying. So if you want to join us, that would be awesome if you're in the area. And every Friday, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say that the fact that you talk to legislative aides is actually more of an advantage. The legislators themselves, you know, they spend most of their time fundraising, doing media appearances, meeting with constituents, you know, being on camera. They're not as familiar with the issues. Obviously, they're voting on things. They have no clue what they're voting on. So they rely on their legislative aides far more than they should. I mean, they should be actually writing legislation. We write more legislation than the entire Congress that's in session right now because all their bills are written by lobbyists on K Street. You should take a look at the K Street offices. It's pretty incredible. But we actually generate more legislation here with just us amateurs than the Congress of the United States simply because we write the bills and send them in. They don't even write their own bills. They don't even read their own bills, let alone write them. So the fact that you're talking to legislative aides in many ways is actually better than talking to the legislator themselves because they may not have a clue. Now, some, of course, will. If you're talking to a Marjorie Taylor Greene or a Lauren Boebert or a Matt Gaetz or Jim Jordan, they're going to know exactly what you're talking about. But you don't need to talk to them because they're already supporting you. You need to and there's no point in talking to radical, you know, Marxists of the Democrat Party. You want to just to show representation, but the fact is they're not going to change their mind. They believe in central control and no guns except for them and their 87,000 new IRS agents. So you kind of do a little triage, right? So the people that are for you, you want to, you know, support them. The people that are against you, you want to say hi just because, you know, you don't want to ignore them. But it's the people in the middle that, well, you know, I mean, my constituents want gun control. They just want to be safe. What can I tell them? Those are the arguments you want to think of very carefully. How do you take somebody in the middle that says, well, you know, I support the Constitution, but, you know, I mean, we want to feel safe. Well, let's have a little, you got a time for some fun for a couple minutes? Or do you want to not do it?
Exactly. So you want to get the people that are trying to get the people that are on the fence in. Mm-hmm. And what we do also is each group has a woman that has a story, a personal story of some type of how the Second Amendment saved their lives, friends, family, or why they support it. So it's that
personal critical
touch, I think that makes, makes a difference.
That's brilliant.
It's just
that's
not a, us out there pounding the pavement. We have our hearts there.
Mm-hmm.
So
well, also
want to
have what's in it
Friday.
For them, too. You know, if you can say this is going to lower crime rates, this is going to make your district safer, you know, this is going to, you know, not only the rights argument only goes so far with these people. They really want to know how they can get reelected. So everything in terms of Congress is how they can get reelected. But if you say people will be able to defend themselves, they'll feel safer, they'll appreciate the fact that you respected their constitutional rights and help them out, that you didn't take their rights away. And we're talking about law-abiding citizens. We're not talking about criminals, you know. And so the fact that you did that, you know, Mr. or Ms. Congressperson, that's a good thing. So support them. Tell them what's in it for them. Give them a reason to vote for it. And smiles and positive works a lot better than negatives. Like, you can't take our rights away. You do that, then they're going to throw out of the office. But say, look, we want to help you. How can we help you? Go ahead.
Right, because we want the same thing. We want just our kids to be safer. We want a safer community. We all agree with that, but and we just have to make them understand that. We just have different views on how to get there, and one of the important reasons is because we know firearms do save lives, even though everybody promotes the ones that take lives and they put attention on the criminals. But just like on my Teal for 2A, every Tuesday I post a story on someone that used a firearm to save their life of a loved one or someone else in public. Even though the one I posted, someone else sent me another one. I'm going to cover that one. Hopefully I'll remember that next week that I already covered this. Otherwise, we'll cover it twice.
That's
but it
okay.
is a pretty, it's pretty, it's pretty cool. It's a recent one that happened in Milwaukee, and it happened to a mother of two. And what was going on was Monday morning, she was getting ready for work. She was taking a shower, and she had two children, ages 12 and 14. All of a sudden, she hears them screaming from the living room. So very conscious of her safety. First thing she does is she jumps out of the shower, runs to the bedroom, grabs her firearm, runs downstairs, and there's a stranger that just broke into her house, and her kids are there. So apparently she's got a couple of dogs. That didn't stop this person, this man, from charging in.
Wrong kinds of dogs, then. She's got the wrong dogs.
Well, either that, or based on some of the other comments that were made in the story, I'm just wondering if he could have been on drugs. When you're on drugs, you know, nothing stops them to some degree, or if they're looking to get some money for drugs or anything for drugs.
Yeah.
Just the way that it sounds like he acted, I shouldn't just guess that, but it just seemed to be. So here's this man that charges her. The dogs don't deter him, and so she shoots him in self-defense. So the thing that people have to understand when you're defending yourself, there is that possibility that you will be taken to jail until the story gets figured out.
Mm-hmm.
And that's another reason to check to make sure if you are going to defend yourself, you have some kind of insurance, like concealed carry insurance with USCCA, US Law Shield, some of those. But what happened is that they didn't identify the person, which is good. I don't think we should be identifying the criminals and giving them any media coverage. But following the shooting, the police arrested the woman, and she was in jail for several hours for questioning. And then they referred the case to the district attorney's office for review.
And where was this at? This is Milwaukee, you said?
Milwaukee, yes.
So we're talking a liberal area with a liberal police department and liberal DA.
Yeah, so I was surprised, actually, they arrested her. You know, it's purely self-defense. The guy broke into the house. There's two children.
It doesn't matter. They can't allow the idea of guns saving lives to get out there. So they have to prevent guns from saving lives to maintain their gun ban agenda. I mean, that's why they do it. That's why they arrest people for defending themselves. They would rather have people die to support their narrative than they would save lives and allow people the constitutional rights. So they're much happier taking away the rights to advance the agenda of gun control, which is really gun rights seizures. You know, and that's why they do it. Why else would you prosecute somebody who saved their own life and saved their kids? Why would you do that unless
exactly.
you had a corrupt narrative?
It would be pretty self-explanatory. I mean, the woman's taking a shower. It even says it here. She's running out there dripping wet. So why would – I mean, it just seemed – when I read that statement, I went, well, that's kind of weird, interesting. But like I said, they did release her, but the fact that they took her in was
what did they charge her with?
That's not something I was – Well, it doesn't say. They just said they arrested her. See, now this might be a little reporting thing. Following the shooting, the police arrested the mother, then released her several hours later after questioning. Then they referred the case to the district attorney's office. So do they file charges against you, then it goes to the district attorney's office, or is it at the district attorney's office to decide if they're going to file charges? I don't know how that actually works.
No, they have to charge you at the time of arrest. Because you have to have grounds for arrest. You have to have probable cause for a search, and you have to have a charge for arrest. This is why the police arrest after they've gathered evidence, done their work, gone to a judge and gotten a warrant, and either a search warrant, arrest warrant, or something like that. They have to have a warrant to do this. They have to prove that what they've done makes sense, that there's a case, that there's evidence. You can't just arrest unless you see the crime. You know, if they witness a crime themselves, they can arrest them because that's the evidence right there. They saw it being done. If they see a shoplifter, you know, or they see an assault on the street,
yeah.
and they're right there.
They
got
it. If they actually arrested her, they just took her in for questioning. So that's another thing. You gotta be careful of what the media says at times too. And like you said, they might. Their agenda is to put fear into people that, hey, if you defend yourself, we're going to arrest you and then, you know, let you sort it out in court. That's another possibility. But also we got to think about
No, I was going to say there's another possibility, too, that they just took her in for questioning, hoping that she would incriminate herself, admit to a crime that they could then charge her with. This is why you don't talk to the police after something like this happens. You don't want to incriminate yourself in the spontaneity and adrenaline-charged, you know, moment. If you've killed somebody defending your kids, you're not in a position to talk to anybody for probably days.
Exactly, and that's why any place I've read or any of these, like USCCA, they always tell you, I will cooperate fully. I need to have my lawyer present, you know, and then stop talking. Because just like you said, you got that adrenaline going. There's a lot going on. She just defended her two children. Who knows what they would have done to the kids or to her if she wasn't able to defend herself. I mean, the kids, here's the other thing. The kids are so traumatized now after this incident. They intend to move. They want to move out. I don't know if they must be renting or owning. I don't know. But they intend to move out once they find a new place to live. So the impact this has on their children is something that, you know, is very important that we need to pay attention to. As well as, here's the other thing. She bought this gun 10 years ago after finding a man. I don't know where she lives. After finding a man sleeping under her son's bed. And she hopes she never has to use it. So apparently 10 years ago, some guy was sleeping under her son's bed, and so then she decided she needed to have a firearm to defend herself. And thank goodness she did have one to defend herself and her children. But it's just, it shows you how important it is to defend,
there's another problem.
To be able to defend yourself.
Oh, no, it is. But here's another problem. Why are there so many people? Why is someone able to get under her son's bed? Why is somebody able to break in that easily? You know, where is the law enforcement component, the societal deterrent to crime? Why do these people feel so emboldened that when people are home? So usually, you know, burglars go in when nobody's home because they want to get shot. You know, you come down to the South here. Come down to the South. Okay, you want to start breaking into homes? Good luck with that. You want to break into a house in Alabama, Georgia, Florida, you know, Carolinas? Texas, you can break in a house in Texas. You don't hear about a lot of Texas home invasions or Florida. Simple reason, you know, you may not walk out alive. Now, we don't know we're not going to tell you which homes you will or which homes you won't, obviously, although liberals would like to do that. But the point is that, you know, criminals are as dumb as they are for committing the crimes, they're not completely stupid. They don't want to get killed when they're committing a crime. But in the liberal states, well, L.A., you got George Gascon. You know, you can commit murder, and he'll say, well, you know, you're a victim. Let's just, you know, go back on the street and be good. You know, let the rest of the gun owner.
Yes, promise me you'll behave.
Yep.
Yeah,
let you out without
bail. That's another reason, you know, we've talked about this before. That's why when you keep letting the criminals, letting them get off easy and getting them back on the streets, their tendency is to commit crime again. So then they come back again. And in the meantime, other people are being hurt or killed, shot, you know. So criminals need to do their time, not let them out until they somehow rehab themselves, if that's possible. Some people, maybe that's not even possible. So that's one big way to provide more safety for the communities is just to take care of criminals and charge them and make them responsible.
And part of the problem is there's no liability. You know, like doctors have liability, vaccine makers don't. Joe's Donut Shop down the street has liability, but police and mayors and city councils, there's no liability for what they do. So if they have a lax crime attitude, if they're creating an environment that crime can prosper and develop, you know, like Milwaukee, for example, they're not responsible. So they have put this mother and everybody else in a position where they have to defend themselves. And that's never taken into account. Nobody investigates and says, wait a minute, your policies let these criminals out, especially if they trace the criminal and say, well, he's been in jail 6 times in the last 3 years. Doesn't that tell you something?
Yeah, you know, yeah, exactly. So somebody's failing to do their job if they've been out that many, you know, arrested that many times and they're still out. Isn't there, I thought there was something, and maybe there still is in Florida, 3 times. And then you're a felon. You get charged with felony, 3 crimes or something. Do you remember anything about that?
Well, I do. It's funny. Jim just popped on the line, too, so I'm going to bring him on right away. California used to have 3 strikes and you're out, and that was because of young person, young lady, she was like 14, 15, was kidnapped and killed. And I used to know her name because I've talked to the father, and it was like a talk show thing, and I'm – But the guy that lost his daughter, it was the impetus for the California three strikes law. And so, yeah, three felonies, you don't get out. You're done. But Jim's law enforcement, so let's ask him. So, Jim, can you shed some light on three strikes laws, Florida or California?
So, yeah, like you said, the three strikes law, and they vary a little bit state to state, but for the most part, a three strike law means typically three felonies or three violent felonies, depending on the state that you're in, causes an automatic sentence of life in prison.
Mm-hmm. Makes sense to me.
So is that still, obviously, in some states, they either don't have or it's not being, hey, Jim, or it's not being enforced. I'm taking it.
Well, it's never been universal throughout all of the states. It's only been some states that have that law.
Does Florida?
Florida is one, right?
You know what? I'm not sure. While you guys are talking, I'll do some research real quick.
Okay. I don't think Florida is. I've never heard it mentioned here.
Yeah, I have never heard it mentioned, but I would have to do a quick check. So you guys can keep going, and I'll do some checking.
Okay, that sounds good. I love this instant research. We're such a team here. You know,
we got a fact checker back.
We got a fact checker back. Yeah, exactly. That's great.
Actually, facts.
Yep, real facts. Yeah, as opposed to, well, if Jim looks up the origin of the California law, like I said, there was a girl who was kidnapped, and right from her bedroom, and the person walked right in and took her. And apparently, there was another sister in the same room, in the bed across the way or something like that. It was a tragic. I'm trying to think of her name, Polly. I'll think of it anyway. Jim will probably find it faster, but anyway, that's what happened. And her father was devastated by this. But I'm sure the mother was too. We don't hear about as much from her. But he, Mr., father of Polly, made a statewide campaign. It was a big deal. I think this is in the 80s. And it became the Polly something, Polly Craft, Polly something, three strikes law. And so it was a very big deal. I don't know. I'm sure Gavin Newsom's watered it down to 30 strikes or something like that, knowing him, or no strikes, or just because they have no bail. They're totally corrupt in California right now. But this was a good bill, and it worked. I mean, crime really reduced because you put people away after three felonies. I mean, how many more chances do you need? If you've proven that you get in jail for a felony and you get out and commit another felony and you get out, by the time you're doing the third one, you pretty much established a track record as far as I'm concerned.
So, Greg, exactly. I found the information for you.
Oh, go for it.
Florida does have a version of a three strikes law. It's a little bit different than other states. If someone has been convicted of a third violent felony, and violent felonies are defined as murder, rape, voluntary manslaughter, kidnapping, carjacking, or robbery, then there is an elevated sentencing that comes into play. And it can go up to life imprisonment, but there's a wide range that the judges are giving. So those term could be as low as 5 years on the low end, up to life in prison, or as high as 30 years to life in prison, depending on which of those particular crimes you are convicted of for your third violent felony.
Huh. Polly Class is the name of the person who was killed. Mark Class was the one who was the inspiration for the California three strike law. I knew it would come to me. Yeah, it's interesting. Well, and I understand violent felonies were felonies. I mean, embezzlement is a felony, but people that do that, are not, I don't consider them a danger. There's a lot of felonies. Jamie probably know more examples. But it doesn't mean you have to put people in jail for the rest of their life. You might, put them on restitution or some kind of payment or something that actually affects them, years and years of community service. But I don't think someone who's an embezzler or a massive tax cheater or those investors, who was that famous New York investor, the Ponzi scheme guy that took everybody's money? Is he a danger? No. He's a danger to people's money, but I wouldn't put him in jail. I'd just make him pay everything back and work the rest of his life for his customers.
Yeah, I agree that there's some things that I worry about when it's just a three felonies rule, because we have made a lot of things that the founders would never have considered a felony to be felonies in our country.
For instance, I
also found another quick thing online while I was researching. Florida also has something that's known as a 10-20 life rule, which some people call a three strikes rule here. And for a handful of crimes, there is a minimum sentence of 10, 20, or 25 years to life as you commit the first, second, and third of those group of crimes. So,
you know, I'm thinking though, Shirley, this is some DC project might want to engage in. Is where, like in Minnesota or Milwaukee, where this woman was arrested. There should be some kind of presumption of you know, you shouldn't be arrested if you're the victim. There should be some kind of victim rights protection. Now, if she committed a felony along with the felony of the people who were there in her place, that's different. But there's some kind of, we should have like a cooling off period or a waiting period that the police cannot interrogate the victim until something has happened. Or it should be an automatic, you know, lawyer option. They can't talk to her until they presented it. I don't know how you do that. Jim would probably be good on this too. Shirley, what kind of victim protection do you think should be incorporated so that people aren't afraid that they're going to be arrested for saving the lives of themselves and their kids?
Well, yeah, I mean, you that just makes, that's kind of a common sense thing you would think, but I don't know. It's kind of like when I was going through all my master course, I have the victim's rights, whatever department or anyhow, they're supposed to help you out. And they're supposed to tell you when the person that, you know, like in this case, this guy, you know, threatened me and tried to take my life. But when they were supposed to let me know when he got out of jail. Well, that didn't happen. You know, this was years ago, but I don't know how you enforce that. That would be great. But then you have these people that they also get sued because someone broke into your house and then you shot the burglar, and all of a sudden they're getting sued by him or his family. I agree. I don't think that should be something that they are able to do. I don't know if there's anything on the books about it.
Well, yeah, is there anything on the books, any kind of victim protection or victim shielding right after an incident like that? Jim Dykes. Come in, Jim. Jim's
okay.
Researching. He's fact-checking.
You know, I'm back.
Okay, good. You muted. Did you forget to unmute?
Yeah, I actually did. I was trying to blindly reach for the unmute button instead of just doing it quickly. So
yeah. He's talking away. Why? Nobody's hearing me. Oh, mute button. Yeah, red light.
Oh, I've
seen
that before.
Yeah, we've all done. I still do that. And we got Bianca on the line too, who will join us, I'm sure, in a second with a question or comment. But victim protection.
The victim shielding or protection, whether it's there or not, kind of depends on which part of the conversation that you and Shirley were just having, you're talking about. So there is shielding within Florida against criminal or civil liability for lawful use of self-defense.
Okay.
So if you go through a lawful deadly force hearing and you're found to have used deadly force in self-defense, then that shields you from both criminal and civil prosecution, at least under Florida law. As far as some law that protects you from being questioned by the police immediately after you've defended yourself, I don't know of any state that has any law like that. And so my advice has always been and will continue to be that if you have to use deadly force to protect yourself when the police arrive, you should tell them that you were forced to use deadly force to defend yourself or others, that right now you're still trying to recover from the trauma of doing that, and that you will be happy to cooperate with them once you have spoken to your attorney. And then the only other thing you should say to them is, if one of the assailants has escaped, I would give them a description of the assailant and how they escaped and which direction they moved, and then sit there and be quiet and don't say anything else.
Are you taught?
And
as,
I think.
Go ahead, Shirley. I have a question for Jim.
I think that was probably the hardest thing to do for a lot of people because they just got this adrenaline rush and, you know, life's going by 100 miles an hour. And they, in their minds, and they probably did everything they were supposed to do properly, and they actually used self-defense in a good way. They just have to just end up lawyering up. You have to lawyer up just to give yourself time to come down from all that adrenaline rush. What we're talking about is this woman in Milwaukee who defended her two kids, her and her two kids. Someone broke into her house in the morning while she was getting ready for work, and the guy just charged at her. She came downstairs. She was taking a shower, getting ready for work, and shot him. The dogs didn't even deter him. He was just charging her. And then it said that in the article, we're just going to go on by the article. It says, following the shooting, the police arrested the mother, then released her several hours later after questioning. They referred the case to the district attorney's office for review. And we're just talking about, you know, her getting arrested. Was she arrested or taken in for questioning? And they're making it sound like she was arrested. So that's how we got into all this.
Well, I would also tell anyone who uses a firearm to defend themselves, you need to prepare yourself for the fact that you will probably be arrested.
So this is a question I had too. On what grounds? You know, don't you have to be charged when you're arrested? Don't they have to have a crime? Or they just arrest you and then start questioning you, hoping to come up with a crime? And what do they teach you about? Let's get that question first. Arrested on what grounds?
So the grounds are fairly easy. You have a firearm in your hand. There is a dead person on the ground.
Mm-hmm.
And right now, the only possible explanation there can be is if you do the wrong thing and start to talk to the police.
But why would they arrest you though?
Assuming you don't say anything, they're going to probably arrest you for something like aggravated assault, which they could then move up to either manslaughter or murder. Now, you may not get actually charged once the state's attorney gets the evidence, but you're going to be arrested and taken to jail, and that's just kind of the way it is, unless you're in a very pro-gun jurisdiction, in which case, absent very, very hard facts that you did something wrong, those jurisdictions typically will not arrest you. But I would say over half of the jurisdictions in Florida, if you use a firearm to defend yourself and there's not a lot of witnesses there to say what happened, you will be arrested. You may not be prosecuted, but you will probably be arrested. And that's why you don't want to say anything. You want to wait until you have an attorney.
Yeah, see, here's where we need some kind of victim protection. You know, no arrest until investigation, no arrest until charge. Because what I think happens is, and I was talking to Shirley about this earlier, is that the police will take that opportunity of the adrenaline rush, of the panic, of the tendency of people to want to defend their actions verbally. Well, I had, and with authority figures, say, well, I had to do this. He did this. He did this. Then, you know, I had to do this. And, of course, then they can incriminate themselves, and that can be used later in charges. So did you get training, or is it like sort of an unspoken thing in law enforcement that's the best time to talk to people because they're so verbal, because they want to talk, they want to defend their actions? You know, are police encouraged to get people to talk at that particular time with the potential of incriminating themselves?
Police are always going to attempt to get you to talk.
Okay.
And it's also important to remember that if you invoke your rights against self-incrimination or you don't, and you start talking, as long as they don't ask you any questions, you have no rights against self-incrimination. You know, they will let you talk and continue to talk, and they will not ask a single question until you stop talking, because everything you say spontaneously without them questioning you is fair game and can be entered into evidence, because they have not questioned you in regard to the crime. You voluntarily gave that information.
Would that be called a statement at that point?
It's a statement it's an utterance. Your protection against self-incrimination applies to being questioned about a crime.
Okay.
So if they don't suspect you of a crime and question you, then your rights don't come into play because they're not questioning you. They're not asking you anything. You're free to say or not say whatever you want. No one is attempting to coerce you to say anything. You're doing it on your own.
Okay. Let me bring Priyanka in real quick, and then Shirley. Priyanka, do you have a quick question or comment?
I'll do my wrap-up.
Oh, you want to do that right now?
No, go ahead, bring Priyanka in.
No, that's why some people should have concealed carry insurance. That way you can call your lawyer as soon as an incident like that happens. Then let the lawyer talk to the police.
That makes sense. Shirley?
Yep. Okay. No, this is a very, very enlightening. I always like the opinion of Jim in the law enforcement and how that all works. Sometimes that you go, huh, but that's all right. I do that a lot on since I came on the show, either from Greg or from Jim. They make me go, huh, and then get my blood pressure up, but that's okay. So
that's why you love being here. We know that. Yeah.
Yeah. Before my cup of coffee, I'm just all pumped up. After this, I have to run to the gym and work out all my aggressions. But anyway, just to let you know, this is Shirley Watchell, Florida State Director for DC Project. I am author of Heels to Holster. I'm a survivor of domestic violence and a supporter of the Second Amendment. If you'd like to purchase my book, you can do so on Amazon. If you'd like to get involved with DC Project, which is a nationwide group of women working to protect our Second Amendment, you can join us in our fight by becoming a participant in any of our states, or you become a donor. We're grassroots. We're always looking for donations to help to support us as we go to Washington, D.C. next month. So you can go to dcproject.info for more information about that. Or if you have any questions, you can email me at dcpflstatedirector@gmail.com. And that's my report for Action Radio Group. Have a wonderful weekend. I'm going to hang on and listen to what Jim has to say, but I'll have a good weekend.
Wow. You've got this down. You're like real radio person. I'm impressed. That was good.
I can close the show. It's everything between the beginning and the closing that I have to work on.
Oh, yeah, we'll get there. Well, no, you're doing fine. No, I'm so glad to have you part of the show. It's just amazing. All right, let's get to Jim. Let me hit the button.
Out of the forests of Virginia to the swamps of southern Florida comes a great man who carries a big gun, probably a Desert Eagle 50 caliber. He served our nation in the military. He protected the citizenry in law enforcement. And now he is a director of Florida Carry, trying to make the Second Amendment, as written, a reality for all Americans. He is Jim Dice with the Second Amendment Report for Action Radio.
Yes, of course, Jim's already here, but I just like playing everybody's theme. That's why I made them. So much fun. I still visualize you like riding up on a horse in one of those old westerns and hopping off and throwing the bridle strap around the little post there and strutting in the saloon. I'm here. Let's have a report. We'll get to do John Wayne at some point.
There we go. I like that visual.
Yeah, it is. No, it's great. This is why. That's how I do all these themes. I get a visual and just kind of run with it from there. So what's going on? We got good news. We got bad news. We got both. What's Shirley's just waiting for more blood pressure so she can work out harder. So,
well, since she needs a little motivation for her trip to the gym today, I can give her some of the latest on a case that Florida Carry has in the court system. And this is one that we actually spoke about back in December, because in December we got a great ruling on this case out of the first Court of Appeal for Florida. In this case, a gentleman whose last name is Lynch, who is an active duty Navy person, attempted to purchase a firearm, went through the NICS background check, and got a NICS check saying that he may be a person who was prohibited based on a mental health issue from the state of New York. Florida Department of Law Enforcement denied the sale and said that he was prohibited, and told him that the records were owned by the state of New York and that he could contact the owner of the records to attempt to get the records, but he would have to gather those records and send them to FDLE in order to prove that he was not a prohibited person. Now, they didn't tell him who in New York had the records. They just said that it came from the state of New York. That's who entered it into the NICS system. And he has no knowledge of what this could be. So Mr. Lynch contacted us. We filed a lawsuit. And the DCA actually rightly ruled that he could not be denied his constitutional right simply based on a entry in the NICS database, that he could only be denied based on the underlying record that would show he was a prohibited person. It also ruled that according to Florida statute, it is the duty of FDLE to obtain a copy of the disqualifying record in order to deny. And so they entered that ruling.
So the burden of proof's on the government. Wow, what a concept. This is good.
Especially in the case where you have a record that's been entered into a federal database and you have no way of getting it, because you have no idea in this case, since he claims there was nothing like that in New York, he doesn't even know where to go to try to find that record, because he doesn't know what county, what state, what particular agency entered the record. He just knows that there's a record in NICS with his name on it.
Did he live in New York? Did he work in New York? Did he have an obnoxious neighbor
I think at some point he actually was in New York.
Okay.
But again, doesn't know what this record is, and FDLE didn't produce it. So we thought everything was well. So fast forward to, I guess, around April timeframe of this year, he had still not received the letter from FDLE saying that he could make his purchase.
He could have been dead by then. You know, if he had a problem or like the woman that Shirley talked about in a home invasion, you know, and of course the state would say, well, it's not our problem. We're just doing paperwork. You know, we have no liability for this kind of stuff. Yet they probably should.
Yes.
You know, people lose their life over delays in firearms processing.
Yes. So we went back to FDLE, reproduced the court order to them again and said, here's the court order. You were required to find this or issue the permission for the sale to take place. And their response was, we have sent a request to the state of New York and New York is not replying.
Well, that's to cancel it right there. The fact that New York isn't replying.
And so we said, then under the statute, you need to issue need to clear the purchase. They refused to, so we filed what's called a writ of mandamus with the first District Court of Appeals for Florida, asking them to compel FDLE to abide by their order and not to deny based on the sole NICS entry.
Is there a penalty for a false NICS entry? Like if someone's just vindictive, like I say, employer, neighbor, X, you know, legal dispute or something like that. Can anybody make a NICS entry? I mean, how do they get in there?
No, NICS entries, it's very limited who can make it. Typically, depending on the state, usually it's law enforcement agencies, courts, in some cases.
Family court?
mental health. Court. Some cases, state mental health places can do so if it's for a involuntary mental health order. But for the most part, it's courts and law enforcement that do it. And as far as the improper NICS entries, I can tell you that about 6 years ago, there was a lawyer in New York who had filed a huge class action lawsuit in the state of New York because there were numerous improper NICS entries where people had gone in for a mental health evaluation, had not been involuntarily committed or committed at all, and the state of New York had entered their name in the NICS database as a prohibited person for mental health reasons. And then when this lawyer attempted to have them correct the entry, the state of New York's position was federal law does not require us to correct incorrect entries. Federal law requires us to enter an entry into the database. There is no requirement for us to correct an improper entry.
Are you noticing a pattern with New York? Hey, Shirley, are you noticing the same thing I'm noticing? New York keeps coming up here.
Yeah. So,
true.
As we go back to... Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Go ahead. I'm just astonished that they can even say that, because every entry is a human entering it. Humans make mistakes. So you're saying that if I make a mistake and I enter something, that you can't change it, you can only enter it. That's insane. Go ahead.
That was their position that they took in court. So going back to the Lynch case, we filed that writ of mandamus and asked the court to compel FDLE to allow the purchase to take place under Florida law in accordance with their decision from December 1st, 2021. We got our ruling back from the first DCA on, I think it was Monday of this week, stating that they were denying our writ of mandamus without allowing us to present any kind of oral arguments to the DCA. They did a summary judgment denying our writ of mandamus, basically saying that Florida Department of Law Enforcement has now done what they are required to do under the statutes by requesting the records from the state of New York, and basically saying that Mr. Lynch can be held in a permanent state of denial of his Second Amendment rights because the state of New York refuses to produce a record to substantiate what they've entered in the NICS database.
Yeah, that's called the systematic removal of rights whenever possible. The really bad thing for us is because
they already issued their order in our favor, right, and that is actually in the record, we have no recourse for their denial of our writ of mandamus. We can't appeal that to any other court under Florida's judicial system.
But you got a good ruling from Florida, though, right?
We got a good ruling, but it does us no good because the court is refusing to enforce, to compel FDLE to actually do what they said in their court order, and FDLE is refusing what the court told them to do.
Okay, is this a Nikki Fried thing from agriculture and concealed carry permit things? Is that where that comes from, or where does this go? Where does the buck stop?
Buck stops with the Florida Department of Law Enforcement.
Who runs that?
Who is responsible for doing it? I need to look. It used to be Bill Swearingen, but he does not run it anymore. So let me look really quickly while we're...
Are they under Florida Attorney General? Who are they under?
That's a very good question of who they are under.
Well, I try. Shirley, what do you think?
No, that's a good question, because you got to start going up the ladder then and find out who, I guess the next step would be to contact whoever's in charge of, you know.
So the FDLE commissioner actually reports to the Florida cabinet. So that's the governor, the attorney general, the chief financial officer, and the commissioner of agriculture. So it's a three-pronged.
But it sounds like an independent agency. They're not in a chain of command. They have superiors with the cabinet and the governor they report to, because everybody does. But it doesn't sound like they're part of the Department of Justice, the Florida Department of Justice, for example, or whatever the Attorney General's office.
No, they are a separate entity other than the Department of Justice.
So what's their interest in this, though? Why would they have an interest in denying a Florida citizen something simply because New York won't issue the paperwork, and then they say, well, if they're going to issue the paperwork, we're not going to do it. Are they that bureaucratic? Are they that Kafka-esque? Are they that bizarre that this is somehow they think it's okay to do this?
Yeah, that's a question for FDLE. I can tell you
FDLE,
oh, there's no way that they will come on. I can tell you that they used to work very closely with us. And when we had issues like this, we could go to FDLE and work through by showing them the statute. And they would actually go back and correct mistakes like this. That changed under Mr. Swearingen. And I just looked it up. Right now, the acting commissioner of FDLE is Mark Glass.
Not sure anything about them. This is one of those bureaucratic places that has enormous power, but people don't know who they are, like us. You know. So this would be a good question for candidates running for office. What are you going to do about FDLE? This is something we could ask our local folks. This is something that both of you and your organizations, Florida Carry and DC Project, could ask candidates. Do you think this is okay? And you know, which of course it isn't. You know, what are you going to do about it? What do we do about FDLE? Bianchi? Yeah, go ahead.
Why come there's not lawsuits when things like this happen? And also, if these entities are not required to obey a court, then why do states obey a court's order?
So the answer to the first question is there are lawsuits. That's why we filed the lawsuit, and we actually won the lawsuit.
Yeah, but you lost the war. You won the battle, but you lost the war.
Yeah.
The second
question.
How
much money is he getting?
Well, we actually, the only thing we asked for was that we get attorney's fees and that they be compelled to allow the sale of the firearm.
And I would ask for $10 million.
Yeah, that's a good point. Jim, you know what this is? This is your concealed carry case. This is the perfect example of why you have to, I mean, constitutional carry. This is exactly why you need it. We wouldn't be bothering with this. We wouldn't have rights denial if we had constitutional carry, because this wouldn't be a case. We wouldn't give a damn what New York said.
Well, under constitutional carry, the NICS system will still be in place. Constitutional carry won't fix the problem Mr. Lynch has, because he's trying to purchase the firearm. It's not carrying the firearm that he has a problem with.
Okay, so yeah, that's a good point. I didn't think of that.
Is the next step then to contact the Florida Attorney General? And because I'm assuming that FDLE is the one making the decision, and they just don't want to take the time to research it maybe, or is it?
FDLE's position is that they think that there must be a record there, and the state of Florida refuses to give it to them, so they're not going to allow this sale to take place until the state of New York comes back and says there's not a record or it's not a disqualifying record. Rather than doing what the statute says and the court order said, which is find the underlying record and ensure that it is actually a disqualifying record and not either an administrative mistake or someone other than the person who's purchasing the firearm or any of a myriad of other things that could make a false positive come in.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So basically they're not doing any more research, it sounds like. Sounds like they're saying.
Right. Their position is we have sent it to the state of New York. Until New York responds, this will be held in a permanent holding state of not allowing him to purchase the firearm.
Well, can the Attorney General force anything onto the FDLE to pursue it even more since they answered to?
I don't know that the Attorney General could. Perhaps the governor could. So, you know, we're still trying to decide where we go from here. And perhaps it's going to Governor DeSantis to see if he would remove the commissioner for failing to obey a court order. But, you know, we'll have to see where it goes from here. We do know that we do not have a remedy in the courts because we have a final decision from the court.
You know, it's like, you know what this reminds me of? It's kind of sideline, but, you know, General Milquetoast Milley, when he called his Chinese counterpart, you know, to complain about Trump saying, well, if Trump attacks, we'll let you know. It's the bureaucrats. They have their counterparts. So the bureaucrats in the Florida, you know, government or have their counterparts in the New York government. They have more in common with each other. So they work together. If one doesn't produce a report, the other one's not going to violate it because they're government people. They're bureaucrats. This is what they do. They work together. So they've got this partnership against the citizen. I mean, New York has no interest in helping a Florida citizen. Florida FDLE, for some reason, has no interest in helping a Florida citizen either. And it seems to be, I think, you know, Shirley's right. You're right that this has to go to the governor or the attorney general, and then they need to have more influence. But there should be a way, if a record isn't produced, if they can't produce a record why you can't have it, you should be able to get your gun. If they can't produce, so the fact that they don't produce the record is irrelevant. They have to produce a record, otherwise it automatically becomes a void Nix thing.
That's how the law is supposed to work. So under the statute, what should happen is if there is a Nix entry that shows that someone may be a prohibited person, then FDLE is given a reasonable amount of time, which is usually considered to be 30 to 60 days, to secure that underlying record from the state. If they do so and the person is actually a prohibited person, then it becomes a hard denial. If they get the record and it's not that person or it's not a disqualifying crime, then the person is allowed to go ahead and make their purchase. After the Parkland bill was passed, FDLE added a new area under that doesn't exist in the statute anywhere, which is basically a permanent decision pending, where they would say that they had not received the record. It had been 60 days, but they would not make a decision until they received the record. That's what brought the Lynch case. We actually had multiple iterations of filing it. When we first filed the case, it went to the courts, and the courts said that we couldn't file a case because they had not reached a final decision, and we had administrative relief still possible. So
this is a bureaucratic rights cancellation.
So we went back to the courts and said that we had attempted to get them to give a final adjudication. They refused to. The court sounded during arguments as if they were going to compel FDLE to issue a final decision before they were able to reach their decision in the appellate court. FDLE went ahead and issued a final decision saying that he was denied and he had to go find the records on his own. That was when we filed the case that we won eventually. And then FDLE just refuses to abide by the order from the appellate court.
So that's where the problem is. Do you know which district Mr. Lynch is in? Legislative district?
I don't know. I don't even know if Mr. Lynch is still in the state of Florida because he's active duty Navy. So he may have moved out of the state by now. I don't know. I'm sure our attorney knows, but I don't know.
It'd be interesting too. We should get your attorney on sometime too. What I was thinking also is I had Michelle Salzman. She's the representative from Escambia County next door to me here. Very Second Amendment, pro-Second Amendment stuff, although some people have objected in the county, which is kind of funny. They don't have the right arguments. But she's someone I could contact. You know, she works closely with the governor and knows Matt Gaetz, and because he's in our district here too, our congressperson. But there should be a way to put some pressure on these folks and get this to the attorney general or the governor, because I can't imagine that Mr. Lynch is the only person in this position. This has got to be, you know, statewide. If they're doing it if denial of finding a record is the basis for a denial of a constitutional right, then I'm sure this is their policy. Well, we don't have the record, so we can't. You know, it's like they're afraid to be responsible or negligent. It's like, well, we can't find the record. We're not going to take responsibility, so we're just going to deny the right. Yeah, Bianchi, go ahead.
That's systematic racism, and it needs to be punished by a monetary fine.
How do you know it's racism?
It's being denied its civil rights.
Do we know the race of the person or does it
matter?
It
doesn't matter. It's a human being. It doesn't matter. Race has no respect for color of skin. and people need to start looking at it like that. It's because they got black skin, it's racism, so you mean a white person can't be have racism? You had to, and you know, not to get off of your topic. Hell, look at there in Normandy, Missouri, where the mayor said he's going to lay off all the white workers. Isn't that not racism?
Oh, that is definitely racism. Absolutely, but I don't know if you can use. Well, let's ask Jim. I don't see how you can use racism unless there's something overtly racist. But I think they would probably do this to anybody, regardless of race, if that's their policy. If you can't find a record, they don't feel any need to do anything to actually find the record. Or if they can't find the record, say automatically, well, we can't find the record, so you know, here's your permit, or you know, or here's your, we'll take this off the NICS system.
Jim, yeah, you're a human. That's his race.
Yeah, right. I think. You're a little sketchy there. I mean, I agree with you, but that's not going to work.
Yeah, there's nothing in this case that I have seen that gives any information that this decision was based on Mr. Lynch's race. And I actually don't know Mr. Lynch's race. I've never met him. So I couldn't tell you what race Mr. Lynch is. I assume that FDLE probably knew, because that's probably part of the NICS entry. I assume, and it's been a long time since I've seen a NICS entry, but I think that the NICS entry gives a name, a social security number, or some kind of identification number if it exists, date of birth, and I think it probably gives race, although it may not. They may have taken race out of it now.
Oh, is it off the form? See, I was going to suggest that.
I don't know. I don't know if it is or not in a NICS entry. It's been so long since I've seen a NICS entry because it's been so long since I was a police officer. I'm not sure exactly what's still included in a NICS entry.
Well, Pianki's making a good point, though. What we could do is take race off every government criteria. I would like to see that done. Anyway, let's really go ahead.
But what's even more amazing, this gentleman is active duty. I mean, if he can, he's participating, he's defending our country.
That's a good point.
He can't even purchase a firearm in the United States.
So he'd give his life to defend the Second Amendment, but he can't use it.
Well, and the other thing that's interesting is there's nothing that the Navy has found that prevents him from carrying a firearm in the Navy.
Oh, that's interesting. What's his job in the Navy? Is it like nuclear weapons or something? I mean, I'm just curious.
I don't know what his job is.
Just because he's a member of the Navy doesn't give him no more civil rights than anybody else. But racism is the act. It has nothing to do with skin color unless you make it that way.
Yeah, as much as I agree with you on almost everything, I don't see the race as an issue here. I think this is a bureaucrat issue. I think these are bureaucrats protecting other bureaucrats. They can't find the record. Nobody wants to be responsible. If on the off chance that Mr. Lynch does commit a crime sometime in the future, they don't want it coming back to them saying, well, we gave him, you know, somehow in a court or a legal report or a media report. Well, who gave him the record? Who you could find you had a violation against him, but you didn't. But you gave him a permit anyway. How'd you do that? You know,
but
or
they don't do it
by
to everybody.
Anyway.
Yeah, they don't do it to everybody to walk in.
It's not an argument, but I'm saying, but that's the argument they're making. Jim, did you have other stuff? We're going to get Derek here. In fact, Derek's here right now. So did you have...
No, I've got to jump off anyway, so...
Okay, contact information, Florida Carry. Let's get that, and we'll talk money. Yeah.
Yep, I'm Jim Dykes with the Second Amendment Report. I'm a director for Florida Carry. You can find us on the web at floridacarry.org. You can reach me directly via email, jim@floridacarry.org. As always, great talking to you and the viewers, Greg.
Well, thank you, except the listeners, but that's okay. I made that mistake too.
Okay. No, yeah, you don't want to see me. That's true.
You don't want to see me in the morning either. I got, you know, tea stains on my shirt, but that's okay. No, I want to get this to Michelle Sullivan because she, like I said, she was on the show last week. She's running for office again. She's quite well connected in Florida government and very two-way positive. So I think this would be a good thing. She may be able to do something or look into it. I'll see what I can do. Thanks, Jim. Appreciate it.
Money. What is it? How does it work? How do you get it to work for you? So many choices. Stocks, bonds, mutual funds, commodities, and then there are the markets. Oil, gold, manufacturing, trade, energy, even government. To make sense of all the places your money can go, Derek Park of Edward Jones Financial Advisors joins us Fridays at this time to make sense of the markets and your money.
And now with the Economic Suicide Report, Derek Park.
Well, good morning.
Good morning. What's going on with these people? Is there? Do they have any concept of a debt limit of any kind? Are they so shameless? You know, they're just added, what, a couple of trillion dollars to the $5 trillion they've already spent. This is the T word. This isn't the B word anymore. This is the T word. We're into trillions, and they're numb to it. They don't care. They have no concept, no foresight, no knowledge of what's about to happen to our economy if this nonsense continues. And nobody knows when it's going to happen, but it's going to happen sooner or later.
Yeah, they'll just blame Trump. I'm sure they're going to raid Trump Tower next.
Oh, yeah, exactly. Well, here's a question for you just to get us going. And Pianki's on the line, too. So, Pianki, feel free to join in. They want money. Federal government wants money. And I think I post this either on your – I know it's on my page. But if they're so hell-bent on getting money, you know, they've got 87,000 new agents. They're going to audit the hell out of everybody. But yet they spent $5.2 trillion on COVID crap, and they spent another couple of trillion on the moldy Green Deal. If they wanted money, they just didn't have to spend it. They would have had an extra $7 trillion.
Well, yeah, and since walls don't work, Biden's going to have one built around his Delaware compound.
Isn't he a free mansion right now? She's like a $20 million mansion somewhere.
What?
He's staying in North Carolina or South Carolina, this $20 million mansion for free, of course, because Democrats never pay for anything. Yeah, I should get this. I haven't done this for a while. I should get the Brandon schedule. Let's see what he's doing today.
Right.
And pull up. Yeah. In the meantime, let's. What do we got here? So we've got Friday. Nothing. Nothing scheduled for today. Yesterday. What did he do? No public events. The president had no public events. Wednesday. So in fact, he's done nothing for days. The last time he did something was Tuesday when he signed away a couple of $1 trillion. You know, and then have all his vacation flights. But apparently he's done nothing all week. No public events all week long. So he interrupted his vacation to sign a bill and went back on vacation.
Well, I think, all future presidents should just do like him. Don't answer questions and walk away.
Yeah, the Biden standard. Yeah, I like it. Let's see if Trump tries that.
Yeah.
So let's get a report and anything you want to particularly feature, and then I'm sure I'll have lots of questions of what's happening of late, especially oil. Oil and gold seem to be the things I kind of key on, especially oil. That seems to be our bellwether indicator for how things are going.
All right. Well, I'll get into it. Good morning. This is Derek Park of Ever Jones bringing you the Daily Financial Market Report. Stocks closed out a hair higher today after yesterday's sell-off as the market tries to resume its rally. Yesterday's market action was driven by retail sales data, and investors are looking for further insight into consumer spending from today's earnings results from retail giants like Kohl's and Costco. The path of least resistance seems to be higher at this point, as investors believe we've already hit peak inflation. Bond yields were lower after the release of the Fed minutes, trading around 2.9% on the 10-year. Oil prices moved higher on stronger demand forecasts, lessening recession fears somewhat. On the international front, European shares were higher while Asian markets were lower. The U.S. equities closed higher today with the Dow Jones up 21 points or 0.06 to 34,001. And the NASDAQ closed up 27 points or 0.21 to 12,965. And the S&P 500 closed up 10 points or 0.24 to 42,84. Again, in the bond market, 10-year treasury yields were trading at 2.88, lower by 0.01. In commodity markets, the price of crude oil was up $2.44 or 2.77% to $90.55, and the spot price of gold was down $4 or 0.21 to $17.73. This is Derek Park of Ever Jones, member SIPC. You can get me at 850-995-0082.
So treasuries, so 2.88. So when they say that means it pays 2.88% of the principal as interest each year? Is that how that works?
It does, yeah. It's an APR over a 10-year period.
So if you have 8.5 inflation overall, and you're getting, say, 3% interest, so you're actually only getting losing 5.5% of your money. So this is a reduction in inflation because the interest rate is lower than the rate of inflation, right?
Yeah.
So why would anybody invest in treasuries?
For stability. So you have to keep in mind inflation is not going to stay up for 10 years, right?
Okay, that makes sense.
I mean, history has shown that it hasn't. I shouldn't say that it won't, right? You know, I mean, I can't predict the future.
Well,
what I can say is
the depression lasted 12 years or whatever it was, yeah.
No, I mean, the whole cycle itself from like peak to end, if you go back to when it happened with Carter, it was like 4 years.
It
started, well, if you go back to that one, yeah, that was a little bit longer. you know, I'm talking yeah. about like when we had hyperinflation, it peaked out, uh-huh. you know, and then it went right back. It was roughly a 4 year cycle. You know, I mean, right now we're about 2 years into the cycle, so maybe it's peaked, maybe it hasn't, you know what I mean? But if you're using that as an example, let's just assume that it was a 4 to 5 year cycle. So if it was down after about 4 to 5 years, you know, you'd look at about 2 to 3 years that everything would be back to normal. And, you know, I mean, you'd be getting a really good interest rate if you had bought that bond, because what's going to happen is if you buy these bonds at these high interest rates, eventually the Fed's going to lower the rate and it's going to make your bond worth a lot more. So if you sell it, you'll make money.
Okay. Interesting.
Not to mention the interest, which should be above where inflation is.
Well, yeah, if you're going to make money now, but if you're going to make money long term,
right.
that's different. So they're hoping ahead of time that inflation will lower. Why do they think that we've reached peak inflation at this particular point?
Consumers seem to think we've reached peak inflation. You know, I would, you know, we just had a meeting with one of our mutual fund partners last night, and they seem to think that we're just barely scratching the surface. Of getting it to stabilize. So, I mean, and, you know, obviously, there's a saying in our world that we predict 9 out of every every 4 pullbacks, right? It basically means we're not good at making predictions.
It's like the
right,
weather
exactly.
people, yeah. Yeah.
I hate making predictions for people, but people want answers. So normally what I do is I draw them out the economic cycle and I say, hey, here's kind of a window of where we are. You know, and I mean, that's not to say that we were, you know, midterm elections are going to be in the next 2.5 months. We're going to see more volatility in the market, right? The market typically in midterm election years does not react well. To what's going on, you know, because they're worried about changes that are going to be coming, you know, so we got a choppy year to look forward. Does that to say that we couldn't end the year in positive numbers? No. I mean, the market's recovered about 10% of what it's lost over the past 8 months so far. So that's pretty good. It's putting some smiles back on people's faces.
Yeah, but something that I was thinking is that the Strategic Petroleum Reserve, Brandon's rating of our oil piggy bank, is going to end after the November elections. Well, that's one of the few things that's lowered any kind of price and is helping any of these indexes, is the fact that
right.
Artificially lowered. So what do they think is going to happen when Brandon's tax increases kick in, when they stop, you know, stealing our petroleum reserve, when the market price of oil actually is the market price, when we stop subsidizing the rest of the world with oil, you know, so that the price of overall, the $90 a barrel, that's probably going to go to $100 a barrel. I mean, I'm just guessing. It's not a prediction. I have no idea, but it's going to go up. So the price of gasoline is going to go up fairly quickly, I think, after the election. The minute they stop, you know, dumping 1 million barrels a day onto the world market. And have they not taken that into account? I think they've kind of missed that little tidbit, you know, in the Washington,
yeah,
or I mean the New York reviews, the money people.
Yeah, I would say yes. You know, I mean, I haven't seen a lot of stuff on that. I mean, and you know, you have to understand that a lot of reporting is extremely biased. You know, so they don't want to put out too much of the real data. You know, I mean, it's a little scary.
Well, I know that.
I mean,
they said zero. they called 8.5% inflation zero. I mean, that's just a lie.
Yeah. For some of the stuff that I've seen, I mean, in order to try to find real things, I mean, I hate to say that I've had to go look.
No, actually, no, that makes sense because a lot of the stuff is hidden. I mean, they want to give good news. I mean, the money media wants to give good news because they want people investing in the market. So they may skew things
right.
This is great news, no matter what it is. Well, the president, who's not the president, just said 0% inflation, even though we don't. Isn't this great?
Right.
You know, so they have these massive lies, right? It's hysterical. But they're lying to themselves. And they're lying to the American public, and everybody's lying. But do you have a chart of inflation since Brandon took office? And when did this business cycle begin? And what kind of defined this current business cycle? What was 2 years ago? So 2 years ago, we're now August of 2022. So that'd be August of 2020. So 2 years ago is before, you know, the election was stolen in November. So how is that a business cycle? What was going on then? Or is it not exactly 2 years? Where do they mark this current business cycle about?
So inflation, let's see here. Inflation was about at the end of the year, right before Biden took office, inflation was at 1.4%. And then it went down to like 1.2. Biden took office, and it took off from 1.2, and I mean it was at 7% by end of 2021.
Wow. Okay, so it was a fairly steady increase because it did everything to cause inflation.
Barely.
Yeah. Now, how come there wasn't inflation under Trump? Because Trump allowed Congress to do the stupid thing and borrow a few trillion there as well. I mean, there was the unemployment gift package. There was the $1,400, you know, non-stimulus checks, the bribe checks, and there was a bunch of other things. And a lot of it fraudulent money, you know, went to companies that were closed or things like that. So Trump should have had inflation too, because when he was screwing up and spending trillions
because
for no reason.
You can do an economic stimulus.
Right.
You know, I mean, basically they can get away with printing a little bit of money, injecting it into the public, and not cause inflation to spike. What happened is like, you know, the government, they do an assessment and say, okay, we're going to inject this money into the public, and we know it's going to cause a short-term spike in inflation, right? You know, if you go back to 08, 09, when Obama did it, right? You know, Obama did it right at the bottom of the recession. Inflation
mm-hmm.
spiked, and then it took it spiked and then it went down and then it spiked again and then it went down, but it was over, you know, a 6 year cycle. Right.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know, Trump took office in 2016, inflation in 2015 was on its way down. Trump takes office in 2016. Obviously inflation kind of picks up a little bit because he had programs and things he wanted to do. So government spending kicks up going towards the end. It starts to taper off again. You know, so the government can write in some of this stuff and not cause too many problems. The problem is when you continue to let it go, right?
Yeah.
You know, so Biden comes in office and says, sure, we're going to extend unemployment another 3 months. And then they extended it another 3 months after that. So they went 6 months of unemployment longer than they originally planned to. On top of that, you had other government subsidies for businesses and things like that that went on longer. You had the second economic – I mean, because Biden said, I'm going to get more money in your pockets, right? So they sent out – I think he sent out two more, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, from where?
After his
– Where do they think this money comes from?
That's you know, I mean, I don't want to say that that's directly where it all came from, but I mean, if you put it all together, it kind of it builds a pretty picture, right?
Well,
you know, I mean,
taxes and
inflation,
printing, taxes and borrowing, those are your sources of revenue, right?
Inflation is government imposed. Anybody
right.
that says anything otherwise doesn't understand economics, right? And they
mm-hmm.
don't understand how the government works. I mean, the bottom line is the government prints money. And, you know, basically puts too much money in the public's hands, right? When you put
mm-hmm.
too much money in the public's hands without the when the demand is still high, without the inventory to cover it, you know, inflation is going to go up. I mean, it's a cause and effect. There is no question about it. You know, so here we are where the government says, whoa, we got to rein this back. You know, now
mm-hmm.
the Fed is supposed to operate independent of the government. And I don't know, time and time again, they prove that that does not, that that's not true. Right.
They raised during Republican administrations and they lowered during Democrat. I mean, both Brandon and Obama had no interest rates at all until now, because they don't have a choice now. But Trump, they had, what, 2.5% interest rates for no reason when the economy was going along great, to slow it down?
Well, I mean, that's normal. You have to keep in mind, Greg, if the economy is going great, you know, in the economy, if they just, like, let it spiral out of control, they can't do that. They got to raise rates to kind of heat it.
That's called a free market.
You're absolutely right. My personal opinion was, I think they were doing it too fast. And then ideally, when we had COVID and they wanted to slam the rates back to zero, which did, you know, when they slam the rates to zero, that makes your growth markets go crazy, right? And all your growth companies, I mean, they can finance debt for free. You know what I mean? Like, they don't have to do anything. It's not costing them money to continue to push forward. And then you come in and say, okay, hey, we're going to start raising the rate. Well, that starts tailoring down growth companies, and all your value companies come back to life, right? Value companies like Procter & Gamble, Johnson & Johnson, right? Your growth companies are going to be like Google and Amazon, right? Mm-hmm. So when the economy's booming, right, they should be raising interest rates. But every time the Fed met, they were raising interest rate 0.25% to 0.5%. So in my personal opinion, I think they were raising too quickly. And then when COVID came around, they slammed the rate back to zero. I think that was economic suicide. They should have went down to maybe 1%, kind of hovered right in there.
The lockdowns, first of all, were illegal from a constitutional perspective, but they were insane from an economic perspective.
Nobody's going to get that. Of course, you know, China, you know, the communist government over there locked everything down, and, you know, they were looking at their model and saying, okay, well, that was successful. And then you got, you know, countries like Italy, where they live right on top of each other and they're very touchy-feely people. You know what I mean? So, you know, their death rates, not to mention their, a lot of people didn't look at this number. You know what I mean? The number of old people in Italy was like crazy high. Right. Mm-hmm. You know,
especially where they northern Italy. Yeah.
Right. Right. Well, so of course their deaths were significantly higher than everybody else's. I mean, I'm sure China wasn't accurately reporting their deaths, but, you know, it would be nice to see real raw data on, you know, what all that really was, and realize that, I mean, you know, I mean, of course it's going to be a flu. There's nothing wrong with people taking precautions, and there's nothing wrong with, you know, if people want to wear a mask and things like that, but shutting down the economy was the worst thing I think we could have done.
Yeah. Yeah. Pianki, go ahead. Then I'll tell you about our data person, John Cullen, who makes the COVID maps, but go ahead, Pianki. Question, comment.
Yeah. What's needed is to prevent the government from borrowing money. I mean, that's the only way you're going to stop it. No matter who you elect, when they get there, they fall in line or beaten in place by those who've been there before them. Derek, do you see that there will be a logical option, a solution?
I mean, I don't. I mean, you know, the government, I would agree with you. I think everybody would agree with you that, I mean, I bet you could go ask Democrats. You know what I mean? Like, really, if you didn't talk to them about spending, and I mean, I'm not being ugly. You know what I mean? I'm just reasonably saying, if you went and asked them, hey, do you think the government should stop spending money? Most people would probably be like, yeah.
Borrowing money. Is the key, because they have to spend some money because there's certain things they have to do. Yeah.
Right. They're borrowing money because they're spending it. You know what I mean? Like, that's exactly it. So, I would agree with you. Yes, I think Democrats and Republicans and Libertarians would all agree to the same thing.
Well, that's what Greg has written. I think Greg written a law on that.
I was just curious what you were going to say about it. But, yeah, and Derek knows it too. We have a bill. I wrote it. In fact, I can pull it up, you know, fairly quickly. But what it says is that the Constitution – let me get my Constitution probably faster. Pull this up right here. It's Article 1, Section 8. And what it just basically – it's a constitutional amendment that takes away the power of Congress to borrow money. And it's very straightforward. Very, very, very simple. Section 8, here we go. So Section 8, the first paragraph says, the Congress shall have the power to lay and collect taxes, duties, imposts, excises to pay the debts and provide for the common defense, the general welfare of the United States, but all duties, imposts, and excises shall be uniform throughout the United States. And then it says in the second clause, to borrow money on the credit of the United States. So in other words, Congress shall have the power to borrow money on the credit of the United States. So what I do, my amendment says, we shall strip that amendment. So Congress shall, and it says Congress shall not have the power to borrow money on the credit of the United States, nor to print money to cover expenses beyond revenues. That's my amendment.
Mm-hmm.
That's it.
Make sure I get a link to it.
Oh, well, I'll post it right now. Let me drag up my I've got all this stuff right here. But yeah, I can pull up the actual bill. I should probably do this anyway because we've got Amber and Brianna's going to join us. In a few minutes here, we're going to talk about their bills. These are folks from the Patriot Academy. We talked about them before. Amber's our Constitution reporter. So yeah, it's right here. In fact, anybody wants to find our bill on the Constitutional Amendment, Congress shall not have the power to borrow money. It's exactly as I said. Article 1, Section 8 of the Constitution shall be amended by striking Clause 2 to borrow money on the credit of the United States. Section 8, Clause 1 shall be amended by adding at the end, and Congress shall have no power to borrow money on the credit of the United States, nor to print money to cover expenses greater than revenues. Yeah, and this amendment shall take effect immediately upon ratification. That's the whole thing.
But, Derek, we hate to keep putting you on the spot, but if you got a problem, like every time you back out through the driveway, your tires are flat, well, go down the driveway and pick up all the nails. And this borrowing money, I remember when the debt was like $9 trillion, maybe even less than that. But now look what it is. And the main reason is because they have the money to spend. And the way they get the money is borrowing. So Greg's bill is ideal. It's a solution.
I mean, I agree. I mean, it's just, what kind of traction, I mean, are you going to get? I mean, I understand citizen legislature. I understand what it does.
I have good news.
I would say again.
I have good news. I have very good news. We have a new ally. If you go back and listen to Wednesday's show, Jay Rice, who was on the show, he runs the PR firm in Washington called the Publius PR. He's helped virtually all of the Fox News staff. He's helped Donald Trump Jr. He's helped a whole bunch of folks. Glenn Beck launched the Blaze. This guy knows everybody, and he's now helping us. And so we're going to be introduced to reporters. We're going to be introduced to a bunch of other people. I'm going to see if I can coordinate his efforts with this new Gateway for Medical Freedom conference, because we've got two doctors who are going to be presenting our bills, the one on vaccine product liability and the cleanup of big tech censorship, in a conference starting Thursday. Things are happening, Derek, mm-hmm. like you wouldn't believe. So that's how we're going to do it. And we're going to see if we can get this into the national debate, and we'll see what happens. So if you go to the Center for Citizen Legislation page, okay, that's my page for all our bills. All right, I've got the disarming bill. I've got the federal constitutional. I got that twice. Let me post this one again. So go to Center for Citizen Legislation. It's a public group. It's on Facebook. It's easy to find. And I'm now posting our bill to a constitutional limit. How did that get there? I got the wrong thing there. I'll have to figure it out. Anyway, you guys chat. I gotta do an administrative.
And here's the thing too. That shouldn't be directed at a national or federal debate. That should start at the states, because the federal government is never going to stop spending money because they can borrow it with no consequences whatsoever.
Yeah. Well, I figure the people to the media, to the states, to the feds. I think that's how this one's going to go. So let me ask you, Derek, a question. Do you know any media sources that might be interesting in writing about money media that might be interested in writing about a bill that would take away the power of Congress to borrow money?
His name's Greg Pinglis.
Well, now I'm going to start blogging. That's another thing, too. I'm going to start writing articles, and hopefully we'll get some plays. I have a PR friend now. We have help. That's what we're doing. I mean, we get some. I know people. I'm in radio. It's incredible what's going on right now. But that's what we're going to be working on. Yeah. Uh-huh.
I really don't. I mean, you're really the only one that I know that does any of this stuff, to be honest.
Yeah, that's okay. And we have the new. Have you had a chance to peruse our new economic page, the Action Radio Economics Project?
I have. Oh, yeah, your page. I'm sorry. Yeah, I have.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that's, I'm hoping you'll contribute lots of things to that. So Pianki too, I did it, I think, last week or the week before. I created another group. I'm probably going to create a historic page too, so we can all events in history, we can start to promoting those as well. I've got like 19 groups now. This is ridiculous. Yeah. I don't ever embarked on, what's that?
I said, that's pretty busy.
Oh yeah. Well, you know, I started this and I'm it's my fault. Blame me. You know, and then this is how we got this crazy thing. It looks like we got Amber checking in, Amber Kemper, our Constitution reporter. So any other news, closing news, optimistic news, economic suicidal news, economic treason news? Seems to be where we're going these days.
I need to find some, like, talking points for this Inflation Reduction Act, but I really couldn't find anything that broke it down on a very simple level. You know, so maybe we'll table that for next week.
Okay. Let me see if Amber has a question for you real quick. Amber, you got a financial question? I know you just joined us and you probably didn't know what we're talking about, but anything in the news you have a question on Derek for financial stuff?
I was listening earlier and I had one and now I don't remember what it was.
That's funny. See, you know, you write things down, you know. In fact, I have to get a new notebook. I've gone through like 6 notebooks already. Looks like Brianna's on the line too. I don't know if she was listening earlier as well. Let's bring her on right now. And here's our newest person. We have newest. Well, actually, let's get a little crowd cheer here. So Brianna Cannon is our newest person here on Action Radio, bill writer and guest of Amber. And so, Brianna, did you have a chance to listen to any economic stuff, or do you have a question before we get on to you guys?
Yes, I haven't actually listened to any of the things before.
That's okay.
But I'm not sure if I have any questions yet.
Okay. Well, let's get on to you guys. And Derek, do you have any questions for our constitutional reports, any of our future here? These wonderful people that have joined us here at Action Radio, for especially Amber, who does the Constitution Report now.
Yeah, I mean, I just kind of a general question. What drove you two to want to do something like this, to be so involved?
Amber, we'll start with you.
Yeah, so I really wasn't too involved in politics, and then 2020 rolled around, COVID happened, and then it was like, I've been blind, like, what is going on? And then I got involved in politics, and from then on, it's like I should have been doing this from the beginning. Like, they, under no circumstances should they have been in the dark with us at all.
Derek? Hold on, go ahead.
I thought there was somebody else that was going to respond.
Well, in that case, well, let me give you a little background here. In fact, Derek, do you have to go or can you stick around for a bit?
I got a couple minutes.
Okay, that sounds good. So to let you know, Amber wrote a bill. She wrote a bill to writeyourlaws.com. And I looked at this. I didn't know who she was. I just thought, well, that's a good idea. And the idea was that all people running for office and incumbents have to take the immigration test, the immigration nationality test to become citizen, the citizenship test. And that way, and those results will be pushed. I thought, well, that's a really cool idea. Let's see if these people actually know what they're doing. And Jim Dykes brought up the objection that you can't, you know, make it official because it's, the Constitution has eligibility requirements. And we're going to have to work out those little details. But she sent this bill in. And I thought, well, that's kind of cool. So I wrote her back and emailed back and said, why don't you come on the show and let's talk about it? And so, I wasn't sure, you know, I didn't know a whole lot about Amber until she came on the show. And Bianca and I were listening. And I said, and I'm like, are you in college? Are you, where are you in life? He says, you know, he says, I'm 17. I'm in high school. You know, I'm homeschooled. I'm like, whoa, this is great. Well, you know, I recognized Amber's talent right away, and Pianki did too, and so did Josie, I think, was on the line. And then I asked her off the air immediately, like within hours. I said, do you want to be do you want to do a Constitution report? She's like, yeah, this would be great. Well, this is about a month or so ago now, Amber, I'm guessing, because I know you took a couple of weeks off. You had Patriot Academy. So go ahead.
Maybe a little over.
Yeah, I lose track of time. So this is how it started. And then we heard last week about this incredible Patriot Academy. And now we've got a new person, Brianna, who's on the line right now, who wrote a bill too. And she's even younger. So our Patriots are getting younger and younger as we do this, which is really encouraging. Anyway, so that's why I say I do this, and a lot of times people aren't prepared. It's my fault. I just like people to have the opportunity to talk to people they would maybe never get the chance to meet
in regular life. And this is why I find it fascinating. This is why I brought a climate change person onto our doctor's panel, because the government lies about that too. Anyway, give you another chance, Derek, if you want to talk to our young folks. And then we'll get on to Amber, and then she can introduce Brianna, and then we'll do it properly this time. Away we go.
As you guys are good. I just was curious why so young, why so involved. I mean, I'm very impressed myself. So, no, that's awesome.
Well, let's ask them again. Amber, now that we have your background a little bit, and Brianna, you can introduce Brianna and bring her into this. She's brand new to this, so we're kind of throwing her right into the fire, so to speak. But Amber, why did you do this? I think you explained that, right?
Why?
Any more to
yeah,
add?
Yeah, why did I do politics, or?
Why so young?
Well, I mean,
so
really,
go ahead, Derek.
Why did you decide to get involved to this extent? I mean, really, people your age, I mean, I'm happy that you're doing it, but don't take an interest in any of that. And then, I mean, without trying to get too political, a lot of kids nowadays just want to jump on the social norm and, bash people and bash the presidency, bash America. I mean, really, it's just young people. I heard, one of my kids' friends say, well, America's a third world country with a Gucci belt. And I'm like, oh, you heard that somewhere and you're just parroting it. And I'm like, and you have not seen a third world country. So, shut your title. I find it impressive. So I just was asking a little bit about what drove you to being more involved.
Yeah. Well, the next generation is ours. I think it's important that we get involved early, especially so that way we know what our country is doing before we take over. Because
right.
The next generation, it's for us. We yep. have to set it up. We have to make sure it's ready for us, especially since, unfortunately, the older generation is not doing that, with the exception of the people on this call.
well, thank you for that. Nice little delivery. That's pretty cool. Well, it's true though, but this is why I started Action Radio, so that we could do something. And it's designed for you guys too, to be able to use this, share with your friends, get used to the idea that you can write the bills that you consent to be governed by. And Patriot Academy's done this, we're doing it here. And so this is why I want to open as many opportunities to you as possible. But that's why you're here.
Yeah. No, that's awesome. That's very powerful. So very happy for you too.
All right. Do you want to introduce Brianna, and then we'll find out about the bills and other things and Constitution Report. And we're just going to kind of ramble here. Pianki's on the line too, so we've got a chance to explore some issues here. Amber, who'd you bring with you?
So I brought with me Brianna Cannon. She also went to Patriot Academy with me. The first time I met her, we were at lunch and she handed me a copy of her bill telling me to vote for her bill. Turns out her bill ended up passing all the way through, and it was signed by the governor. Her bill is relating to the adoption laws in Oklahoma, which we kind of talked a little bit about last week.
Mm-hmm.
It's really cool. She was
Can
one
I
say
signed by the governor? Did this go to the legislators? Was it submitted as a bill to the legislature, or was this part of the the academy that was signed by the governor that was like a mock bill? Is it a real bill or
yeah, it was a mock bill that was signed by our step-in governor. Since it was mock legislation, we have a governor, lieutenant governor, and speaker of the house. So all of those
right.
people are elected for the academy, and so it was
okay,
signed
so,
by our elected.
So it's an entire created legislature that symbolizes the Texas legislature.
Yeah, it is.
Okay. So now the question is, are you going to submit your bill to the actual legislators and hopefully they'll put it through?
Brianna?
Yeah, let's find out, Brianna.
I actually hadn't thought about doing that. Of course, there would have to be some changes because whenever I was there, somebody posted an amendment to my bill to
mm-hmm.
protect those who are already in a contract. And Senator Johnson actually pointed out that in the Oklahoma Constitution, somewhere it was saying how you can't actually like void an existing contract or something like that. So if I was to do that, I would probably have to take out that amendment or alter it in some way. But yeah, I think I might try that. Might try and get all the facts on it first, but yeah.
Well, let's get to hear a little about you. What's your background? And then I have some questions on this bill, because it sounds like a great bill. And I want to see if we can get you to post it on writeyourlaws.com so that you can share it. So it's not going to be just part of Patriot Academy, but this will live on as Amber's bill lives on and gets worked on. And we're going to see what we can do with that, too. So how did you get started in all this political stuff?
So kind of similar to her, whenever COVID hit and the elections and everything else, I kind of realized how ignorant I was on everything. I still am today. I don't know nearly enough of the stuff that I should, but I did Patriot Academy to take some steps to learn more and get educated.
So this is open to people across the country.
Yeah.
Patriot Academy. So you came from Oklahoma to Texas, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes.
So you're younger too than Amber. So Amber, what are the ages again at Patriot Academy? How young can folks be, and what's the age limit?
I want to say it ranges from 16 to 25. I think 25 is the cutoff.
Okay. That seems old for me, because especially with 16-year-olds, because it's such a different point in life. Maybe like 16 to 20 or something like that would be a better grouping, because you got high school and college. It's a mixture, which makes sense. I mean, I'm still an advocate of the one room schoolhouse, but because you had, kids ended up teaching each other. But the idea, it just seems very different that a 25-year-old would have a very different interest in legislation than a 16-year-old high school student. I'm just thinking about that.
Yeah, when you have all of these people with the same mindsets and the same goals, I think it's like age just kind of diminishes, and it doesn't really matter how old you are. You're all just here for the same purpose, getting to know each other. I really see age as a problem at Patriot Academy.
That's good to know then. But the problem, the other thing I see, and it's not really a problem, but the fact is you do all this work. You write these bills. You go through a mock legislature. They're signed, they're duly passed, amended, signed, and then that's it. Then it becomes like an academic exercise.
Yep. Yeah, unfortunately, there's not much that goes from there. However, there was one House member, actual Texas House member, that was at Patriot Academy, and he's bringing a bill this next legislative session that was passed at Patriot Academy.
Which one's that one?
It does happen.
What's that bill? Okay.
That one is relating to the schools, the felonies that happen in the school. So if it's like, I want to say a class C or D, then it's reported to the felonies, and the felonies take care of it, because currently, like, the students are protected. Like, if they throw a chair at a teacher, they're protected, and, like, they basically get a parking ticket.
Is that Lana Burkhart's?
Yeah, that was Lana Burkhart's.
I tried to
get her on today, but she's on a flight.
Say that again. I'm sorry. I think I missed it.
Sorry. No, I tried to get the author of that bill on, but she's flying out of town.
We'll get it next week. We may have to get an extended time too. We may need more than our new schedule, because you've got so many people involved. Or we'll just like devote a show to a guest report. So we're gonna have to move Amber a little bit from this hour, fairly soon here. So we'll have more details as we go. Brianna, are you homeschooled by chance? I'm just curious. You don't have to tell me if you don't want to, but I'm just that seems to be the trend.
Technically I'm moving to homeschool officially this year. Last semester, I did like a virtual version of school, but in the past I've done charter and public. But this semester I'll be moving to an official homeschool.
Which do you like? Which one works out best?
I don't really know. I mean, public school is fun because you have all your friends and everything, but it just doesn't teach the right stuff. Virtual, I guess, was able to be more flexible, and I really don't know. I don't know if I could really choose because the information is almost the same, because it's through kind of like the same curriculum, and I haven't yet done the homeschool part, so.
Well, I'll ask you next year then, and then you can tell me what you think about that. So feel free to come back on the show anytime. Both of you are just, incredible what you're doing. It's really great. The question I had, well, I'm going to get to the bill in a little bit. There's something else I was going to ask you about this. The COVID thing, both of you, you know, you weren't politically, you know, I guess aware of what was going on until COVID. COVID has changed. And I'm wondering if that's changed your entire generation. I mean, I guess it must have, where people all of a sudden realize the power of government to take away everything. And this is what, you know, Germans realized in World War II and, you know, Japanese in the 30s and the Russians in 1917 and, you know, Cambodians with, you know, the killing fields and the Cubans, you know, since 59, that people around the world think, well, it can never happen here. And one of the most important things you can learn is that, yes, it can, because it did. Now, were we in gulags and, you know, the assassination squads? No. But we certainly had lockdowns and masks and rights were taken away for no reason. And all these things happen. And here you are, you know, happy teenagers doing teenage stuff. You're going to school, hanging out with friends, doing all that. And all of a sudden the government says, well, you got to wear a mask and you can't go to school. And, you know, we're going to close your family business. And, you know, you can't do this and you can't do that. And you have to wear this, you know, face thing. And you have to conform. We tell you you have to conform. Your rights are gone. That had to be one hell of a shock.
Yeah. I definitely think a lot of people switched their views when COVID happened. When you realize how easy it is for the government right now to take your rights away, that really opens people's eyes.
Did you see it as a difference in party at all, or is it just government in general? Because both parties were involved to a lesser or greater or lesser extent.
I think it's both.
Okay. Brianna?
Something that I've noticed with this is a lot of people, like whenever you talk to people about voting and stuff and they just don't really want to vote or they don't really care or get into politics or know anything, one of the big things is because they feel like they have no effect, like they have no hold over it. So I think that even though people already kind of had that idea, it really took COVID for people to be like, oh, wow, it's actually real how much power they have.
That's interesting.
And people
too.
Still think they have no say.
Yeah.
They feel like they have no impact, even though they technically, by the Constitution, have the power. They don't feel like they actually do.
Bianca, did you want to make a comment? I thought I heard you there.
Yeah, I do. I think that they should also keep in mind, as the government is trying to take your freedoms from you. You as a citizen of a state, and states have a right to take back the overreaching powers the government have accumulated. Like, for instance, the borrowing of money for them to be able to do these things that they're doing, then pass that bill on to you taxpayers. So consider that also.
Yeah, we were talking earlier before you came on about my bill. It's a constitutional amendment that takes away the power of Congress to borrow money. Because you two are going to get stuck with a $30 trillion, $35 trillion, $40 trillion bill as it grows and grows. And, of course, the interest on that debt has to be paid every year. I'd be screaming and yelling if I were in your position.
Yeah, well, the debtor is enslaved to the – what's the saying? The debtor is enslaved. I don't remember what the full thing is, but, you know, when you have debt, you're
right.
A slave until that debt is paid.
Yeah, well, that's what a mortgage is. You know, people that buy a house on a mortgage, that means a death contract. Mort, you know, is death, like a bunch of different languages. Mortality, you know, mortician. And that's where the word comes from. So, yeah, it's fascinating how this all works. Well, there's a bill that you guys can talk about. I want a good question for Brianna, because you were mentioning that people don't think they have an effect. Why do you think that is, that people feel completely powerless?
Probably because, like, right now people are seeing what's going on and people are fighting all these different ways. But just like the IRS thing, it happened and nobody really likes it, but nobody thinks they can do anything about it. People just don't know what they can do.
Mm-hmm.
They feel like their votes won't matter because whoever gets in is whoever gets in. And they just... I think it's a big education thing.
Yeah. Who wins? When the people are powerless, who wins?
The powerful.
Yeah. So I think it's by design. I've always thought it was by design that part of, you know, the conditioning, part of the deep state, part of the elite, part of the globalist, part of anybody who's rich and powerful. They want to condition people to believe they have no power. One of the ways you do that is you put people in the government school that indoctrinates you, that takes away your power. As Pianki talks about all the time, that the states have powers over the federal government because the states created the federal government. The Constitution is a limitation. They cannot go outside the bounds of the Constitution. That's why we have one. That's the whole basis of the Republic, is a limited government with guaranteed rights that cannot be voted away by democracy. The reason we're not a democracy is a democracy could take away your rights, the rights of the accused, the rights of Second Amendment rights, the rights of free speech, the rights of religion. All those things could be jeopardized in a democracy because they can vote them away. And if the rich and powerful can convince people through education, through the economy, through taxes or everything else that they have absolutely no power, they win. Well, I didn't stand for that, you know. So I'm like thinking, okay, you know, here's what, you know, I'm on a bike ride, right? I'm you know, San Francisco in 2014. So I'm on this bike ride. You guys were really young then. I'm thinking to myself, how can we fix this? What can we do? And I came up with this crazy idea to combine a citizen legislature with a radio show. And that didn't evolve right away. It took a while to kind of figure that out. But now we're in a position where people around the country are learning, you know, what you guys learned at Patriot Academy, but I wish they would extend it further. So what I want to do, and I'm going to be talking to Amber about this too, is that we take graduates of Patriot Academy and say, great, you went through this incredible experience. You know how government works. Let's not waste it. Let's keep it going. Let's have you write citizen legislation. Let's have you teach other people how to write citizen legislation. Now, the thing, Brianna, is we don't know what's going to happen. We're pioneers here. We have no idea, but it's going to happen soon, that the media and a whole bunch of people are going to start sharing bills. They're going to be sharing shows. We're going to go viral. It's going to explode on the scene. We've got help now. I've got you know, PR person in Washington helping us out. We've got all these different things happening. So it's going to happen that this peaceful uprising of legislation is going to happen. So all those folks that feel powerless, we have to convince them they're not. And the fact that you two are writing bills means that you don't accept being powerless. Now, you know it didn't go anywhere there, but what if you write one that does go somewhere? What if Brianna, you take your bill, post it to writeyourlaws.com, and that way you got a bill linked to it. You can share it with friends, family, media, you know, your high school and then college. You know, you can go directly to media people and say, hey, here's this bill, especially Oklahoma media. You could do anything with it. And then as more people catch on to it, you let them go. It's, hey, great. The more people support it, the more people send it in, the more things happen. So there's no reason to let this stop at Patriot Academy. You can take that bill and just keep working with it. How's that sound?
That sounds really amazing.
Welcome to Action Radio. Yeah, well, that's what we do here. This is why I created all this. We got background noise coming from one of you, so I'm not sure where. Somebody's got something in the background. Maybe the show in the background.
I don't think it's me because I hear it too.
Yeah. Pianki, you got background noise?
I have a fan going.
No, it's not that. I think
no.
Let's try. No, it's not Pianki's line. Let's try Brianna's line. Yeah, that's where it is.
Yep.
Brianna?
It's my line?
We've got something in the background, a TV or a speaker, or there's something playing somewhere. The mic's picking it up. So you pick up everything. We get dog barks and, you know, parents screaming, and we got all kinds of stuff. Do you know is there a delay? Are you listening to us on a computer or something?
No, it's through my phone.
Is something playing on your phone?
I have a phone.
I'll tell you what. That's okay. Wait, see if you can find out what's playing on your phone that's creating the background noise. But because I have another question for you, I want to hear about your bill. But let's talk to Amber in the meantime, and I really want to ask her about her bill. Let's do some Constitution stuff. Brianna, I'm going to mute you for a couple of minutes, so you can find out what's going on with it. I want to find out about your adoption bill. But Amber, more stuff. You want to give your Constitution report? Do you want a Patriot Academy update? Is it Rick Green? You know, see if we can get him on the show sometime. I know that's a process to get guests. Yeah.
So we'll see.
So you emailed him?
Yeah.
Okay, good. All right. That sounds good. Okay. So I got Brianna mute just for a couple of minutes. Hopefully she can figure out what's causing the noise, and then we'll I can go with it, but I'd rather, if it were corrected, that'd be better. So you want to start talking Constitution stuff, and then I'll bring Brianna back, and we'll get down to her bill?
Yep.
All right, go for it.
I think we're finally on Article 1, Section 1 of the Constitution.
Ooh.
Been a
Let's
while.
Begin. Yeah. Well, yeah, but, you know, we're fragmented here, but we're all ADHD, so it's okay.
Yeah, so the first section says, all legislative powers herein granted shall be vested in Congress of the United States, which shall consist of the Senate and the House of Representatives. So this one's basically granting all legislative power to Congress, which is the Senate and the House of Representatives.
Yeah, this is key. This is huge. Brianna's back, and her line is live. And Brianna, thank you. Whatever you cleared up, it's great. It sounds good.
I just moved it. I couldn't find anything, so I just
Whatever you did is right. Amber, are you here for – I mean, Brianna, are you here for the hour? Do you have time? Because I don't want to shortchange you on your bill.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, good. All right, that's good. Well, let's get into the Constitution stuff. Okay, great. So, Amber, all legislative powers, those three words are incredibly powerful.
Yeah, it is.
So what is legislative? What do we mean by legislative powers?
So that would be basically creating the laws of the United States. All of that's granted to Congress. Well, I shouldn't say creating, passing the laws.
Ooh.
We create the law.
Ooh, elaborate. I think you're onto something here. Tell me more.
Yeah, I think they pass the laws, whereas the citizens and lower, maybe not so high up people create the laws. We write them.
See, that's a revolution. That's a revolutionary statement you just made. And I agree with you completely because that's why I started Action Radio. You know, in fact, our mission statement, you know, we the people give our consent to be governed through writing the laws by which we are governed. So you've already internalized that you, and this is revolutionary. This is you go to 99.9% of Americans will not think that they create the laws. They think that the government creates the laws. But you just said we create the laws. Do you realize how significant that is?
Yeah.
I'm impressed.
Yeah.
Let's give a round of applause. We do that a lot around here. Do you know how empowering that is? Go ahead.
A lot of people don't realize that they're the ones that have to write the laws and that it's in their hands, especially the next generation doesn't realize that they're setting up the next generation for their life. It starts with them.
Here's something else you said that's incredibly significant. The next generation has to write the laws, not can, not maybe should, not maybe has the option to. You said they have to.
Mm-hmm.
That's incredible. No, I mean, because no one, I don't think, you know, I think you are unique, you know, amongst millions of people. I could ask millions of young folks, do you think people have to write the laws? What do you mean have to write the laws? I don't know how to write laws. I don't know what you're talking about. And yet you're already at a development stage in your politics where you think that people have to write the laws.
I mean, if you don't write them, who's going to?
Well, that's the question. Who does write the laws? Who writes the laws now for Congress? We went over this a few weeks ago. I'm sure you didn't hear it. Who writes the laws?
I'm not sure specifically.
I'll tell you. Lobbyists, special interests,
yeah.
NGOs, corporations, fanatical wacko groups, they write the laws and they give them to Congress and they pay for them with bribes, you know, called lobbyists. They're bribers. And they offer campaign contributions and trips. Congress, you, Amber, have written more bills than anybody in Congress today because people in Congress don't write their own laws. You're writing more bills than they are. Brianna, you have written more bills than members of Congress. Brianna?
Yeah.
Okay, well, what do you think about it? You know, I know you're here. You're kind of blown away by this, I'm sure. This is your first time here. Get used to it. This is what we do. We make revolutions all the time. So do you agree with Amber that you can write the laws, that you have to write the laws? Where do you stand? And this may be new to you, so you know, feel free to explore the whole idea of writing laws.
I agree with her that we need to, because by us writing our laws, since we the people have the power, we keep it. But if we continue letting all the big corporations write all the laws, they continue to get more and more power over us. Like, we continue down the path we're on right now, basically, which, as we can see, is going into the ground.
This is brilliant. You two are amazing me. I'm so thrilled. I can't tell you. You know, you guys are going to save your generation. Pianki, what do you think?
Well, yeah, you know, I'm in favor of it. And these young people, what they're doing, and as they learn, as they go along, is very, very good.
Yeah.
More should be required to do this. This should be a requirement to graduate from high school.
Well, it'd be interesting if there was a civics course that said that taught citizen legislation. I mean, I didn't think about this till just now, but it'd be great to be able to incorporate this into schools where you know, as part of your education, you need to start talking about this stuff. Josie's online. I want to get you in a bit. Go ahead, Amber.
Yeah, I was going to say that's interesting because a lot of people are joking with me because I want to be an elementary education teacher. They're saying that the next generation is going to be writing bills because I taught them.
Oh, interesting. See what you started? This is really encouraging. This is great. I want to make one point before I get to Josie here, but when you say all legislative powers herein granted shall be vested. Oh, it's interesting. It's herein granted. So it was granted from the states. That's the implied that's not that people, I think, skip over. And I did now until I read it. All legislative powers herein granted shall be vested in a Congress of the United States, which shall consist of a Senate and a House of Representatives. Well, if all legislative powers are herein granted to the Congress, what does that say about legislative powers of the Supreme Court, of the President, and of the regulatory agencies, the bureaucracies?
They don't have them.
Which means?
They shouldn't be passing laws or making these stances that are, quote unquote, based off of legislation.
So when the Supreme Court, you know, makes national policy, whether it's Roe v. Wade, gay marriage, whatever they're doing, that illegal aliens have to be educated in our schools at American taxpayer expense, are they not making laws through court decisions?
Yeah, they are.
I think I remember learning this. It may have been from Patriot Academy, actually, where the Supreme Court, it may not have been, I really don't remember where I learned this, but where the Supreme Court's their only job is really to deem something, whether it's in the bounds of the Constitution or not.
Well, that's judicial review. That's a whole discussion I want to get into. We're going to talk about that big time. But let me ask you a quick question, Brianna, and then I'm going to get you, Josie. Does the Supreme Court have the constitutional power to interpret the Constitution?
What do you mean by interpret?
Well, everybody says that the legislature makes the laws, the executive enforces the laws, and the courts interpret the laws or interpret the Constitution. Were you taught that or no?
No, I was not taught that.
Interesting. Then that's a change. That's a huge change because you know, most people, they say, well, of course, interpret the laws. They interpret the Constitution. And, of course, there is no interpretation clause in the Constitution. That's why I asked the question. So you're on the right track.
Yeah.
You guys are getting you're getting it right the first time. Most people have to go through an evolutionary process to get to that point. Let's get Josie on here. She wants to talk to you guys. Josie, you're on with Amber and Brianna.
Good morning. I just started listening when the girls got on. I'm very, very proud of both of you young girls getting involved because the people have the power in this country, and you guys can be an example and get a lot of young kids involved because nowadays don't have a clue what's going on. They're too busy playing with their phone little games because that's the distraction that the government wants for you to do. And I live through communists, and let me tell you, in my neighborhood, all the kids were being brought to meetings to teach them how to be communists at the age of 12. So that's the agenda of the Communist Party. They want to start training them as young kids. And this is what we got going on here with Common Core and all this other MTV, Netflix with Obama running the show, so many different teaching that they're brainwashing our young kids in our school as young as middle school here in America. So I'm very proud of you two young girls that you're learning about our government, and you can take the power. The people has the power in this country, but they don't want you to know that. They want you to be ignorant, not for you to know that. And I'm so glad you guys are doing something.
Amber, Brianna?
What do you think?
Yeah, I definitely agree. I was a little upset when you said that having these kids take communist classes, which I
no,
know
no, in my
good,
country.
But
tell me where you're from, Jesse. That might make sense.
Yeah, I thought it was in America.
No. I'm from Nicaragua. They were teaching all the kids at the age of 12 or younger how to become communists because I attended some of the classes. Yeah.
Well,
I'm from another country.
Was that recently?
I'm 64 years old, almost. But what they're teaching in our schools in our country, it's not good. It's not good. They're brainwashing our kids to hate America. I had a college girl in my store, and she hates this country. Why do you want to hate your country? Look at how many people come to America. They're willing to lose their life to make it here. And they're teaching in our schools here in America to hate America. And that's not right. They're not teaching you that you have the power of as a people, as an American, that they work for us. We don't work for them, for this government, this corporation.
Yeah. I mean, if you hate America so bad, why don't you just leave? Why are you still here?
That's a really good
America.
Question. No, but,
the girl that works for me, she's an American girl,
But they don't think of going
one
anywhere.
One of the things
think
that you said,
making our life different. I'm sorry. Yeah, go ahead, Brianna.
Go ahead. One of the things you said about, you know, teaching the children all of these communist things, and now we know that it was a different country, but the fact that we both beforehand thought it was America, and whenever you're saying it, I was like, wow, this is appalling. But it was believable, and it's sad for a minute that I actually believed that that had happened in America. Like, it shouldn't be something that's believable. It should be something like, no, that would never happen in America. There's no way.
But it's happening.
But I actually,
It is happening here in America. I'm from Nicaragua, and they were teaching young kids how to be communists. So communists is here in America. Black Lives Matter, Antifa, they're brainwashing a lot of young kids, and they're lying. And in the school, some of the teachers, they were hired to brainwash a lot of American kids. I see a lot of kids leaving my church to go to college, and in a couple of years, they totally change. They're not the same kids I knew at church. You know, it's very sad what's happening in our school. 1.2 million kids did not return to public school after COVID because their parents found out what was going on in the public school. They opened their eyes, and they're still opening their eyes now, too. So more and more people are not sending their kids to homeschool. I think some of you are homeschooling. You have one of you girls or both of you?
I'm homeschooled.
Good. Better.
Yeah, Amber's going into college, but it's interesting that there are only so many colleges you can go to where you're not going to get the leftist brainwashing. So how did you two come out so special? What was different about you guys that is different from a lot of other of your friends who are American-hating, we're a racist country, we're sexist, we need to open our borders, we need to bring everybody in here. You know, it says on the Statue of Liberty, we have to bring in everybody, you know. How come you two turned out so different? Oh, Brianna, we got your background noise again. Move your phone, Brianna.
Oh, darn it. Okay. Did that work?
Yeah. That's perfect. Leave it there.
All right.
Amber?
Yeah, to answer your question, I don't think we conform to what the media and what everybody else is wanting us to believe. We dug deeper. We saw behind the scenes. We didn't just get and take what was handed to us. We did our own research.
You know, it's interesting. If we could get some of the Patriot Academy graduates together, you two would be perfect to run like a sort of like a Charlie Kirk, you know, Turning Point USA thing, except that you'd be geared towards legislation. I mean, I'm not sure what they're geared towards exactly. Yeah. You know, because you're going to be getting legislative skills, and I'll work with you directly. You know, I'll do whatever I can to help you out from what everything I know. Everybody else on the panel, Josie's written the bill, Pianchi's written, I think, a couple of bills. You know, and the more you do it, the more practice you get, you know, the easier it gets. And then the advocacy, you know, as you say, it's empowering. And the fact that Amber, you said something brilliant earlier, you know, that we have to write the laws. So you feel compelled to write laws. You feel so, you know, connected to the system of the laws that you can say that we have to, because this is how our life is going to be. That is incredibly encouraging. But again, that is not a view shared by hardly any people in this country. But if you can start something, if you're interested in working with that, you know, we could set up, I actually have a student advocacy group, but we'd have, you know, the Young Legislators page or something like that, or whatever, you know, talk to me. Think of some ideas. Let's see what we can do with this. I mean, we got a lot of power here. Yeah. I want to get to a couple of things. One, I'm looking at the Constitution. I want to skip over the parts of it that are like nuts and bolts, you know, how people are elected, the numbers, you know, unless it's something really relevant. Mm-hmm. But we don't need that kind of stuff. It's more the theoretical, like all legislative powers. The declarative statements are the ones that are most powerful. I want to kind of get on those. Anything else on Article 1, Section 1, and then we'll hear about Brianna's bill.
I don't think there's anything else on that one. It's kind of short.
Yeah. Well, the shortest ones are the most powerful. And I think what we talked about earlier, that if all legislative powers, you know, are vested in the Congress, then no legislative powers are vested anywhere else. I mean, all is a powerful word. All is an infinitive.
Right.
You know, it's not most. You know, it shall be maybe. there's no ambiguity here whatsoever. All legislative powers are vested in the Congress. Brianna, did you have a comment on that?
I agree with y'all. That's my comment.
Well, that's good. You can do that. You know, we're all friends here, so we're all of like mind. In fact, it's always nice when we get a liberal person calling in. They usually type in on the live chat because they don't want to engage with us, which is really too bad. Brianna, can you tell us about your bill and what was in it and what caused you to write it and how you might want to follow through maybe?
Yes. So before Patriot Academy, or I guess I should say before I was reading the part of like making and writing, creating a bill, I was actually talking with my parents about, like, adoption costs being so high and making it so difficult. And so whenever I went to go actually, like, think out what all kinds of bills I would write for to bring to Patriot Academy, because I was going to write one, but I was trying to think of all these different ideas. Mm-hmm. And the only one that I kept coming back to was the adoption costs. And at first I was like, well, that's not really, I guess, strictly pertaining to laws and everything like that. But then I was like, you know, why not?
That's always the best attitude. Anyway. When in doubt, you know, go for it. It's always easy to pull back to people that don't try things. So what's your bill called? And if you have it in front of you, you can read part of it. Yeah, I'd be curious.
Yeah, I can go ahead and read it. Okay. The one I have in front of me is a little different than the official one. I'll explain the differences once I read through it. It says, a bill to be entitled an act relating to lowering adoption costs in Oklahoma, be it enacted by the legislature of the state of Oklahoma. Section 1, removing the requirement placed on newborns' adoptive parents to pay living and transportation expenses of the birth mother. And in the official one, it will state where it's found in the statutes, which is 7505, 3.2, Title 10, Part E and F of, like, 2B. I don't know. There's a lot of different subsections in there. Mm-hmm. And then Section 2 says, removing the requirement placed on newborns' adoptive parents to cover all prenatal costs for the birth mother and child. Newborns' adoptive parents only cover the costs of the newborn once legally adopted as their child. And this act takes effect within 90 days.
So what's the current situation? What caused the need to write this bill?
So right now I'm going to give you some numbers. The average cost in the U.S. This is the average U.S. cost, is $41,532 to adopt a newborn child.
Whoa.
The Oklahoma official minimum for Oklahoma specifically is like $70,000. So I don't know why specifically Oklahoma has it so high. I guess because they just decided to add all of this stuff in. So my bill that I passed might only drop it $5,000, maybe even just $500 in some cases. So it's not making a huge impact. It's only making a little one, but there's so many parts to it that you can't really make big changes in the, I guess, the time frame
more
that
bills.
I had to make it.
Well, unless
yes,
like, well, you can always write a more comprehensive bill now because you're not limited by time. So what is so expensive?
I'm actually
expensive,
writing a follow-up one.
Go ahead.
Oh, sorry, what?
No, tell me the follow-up.
So for Next Patriot Academy, I'm going to follow up. And the one thing that I have, I think it was about counseling for the birth.
Okay.
I'm still trying to figure out who exactly is paying that, if it's the birth parents themselves or the adoptive parents. But basically, I'm just I don't think if the adoptive parents have to pay for those costs, I don't think they should, because if the birth parents need counseling, they should either A, get it themselves, or I don't really know why they would want that really.
Well, let me get some general questions. I think Amber tried to explain this once before. It was studying your background noise, so whatever YouTube is playing on your phone, it's going through the desk, and we can hear these muffled voices. It's kind of funny, actually.
Wait, is it still going?
Yeah, it kind of comes
is
and goes.
I don't know what it is. It's like, I don't know what I'm talking.
There's something playing on your phone somewhere, because I know it's your line.
It almost
or maybe,
seems to be good.
What do you think it is, Amber?
I don't see anything.
It's just whenever we're talking that we hear it.
So I wonder if your show, do you have the live broadcast on your phone?
No,
you're
I just
on
have
your...
like the call itself.
Just the calling number? Okay, that's good. All right. Well, we'll see if we can figure it out. It's not bad. It's not going to stop us from doing anything. We only have about 50 minutes anyway. So as I understand it, if you're in Oklahoma and you want to adopt a child, first of all, this is economic discrimination because poor people can't adopt under this system. That the adoptive parents are paying almost everything for the birth mother. I don't know if it's birth parents, but the birth mother. So the financial burden of adoption is all on the adoptive parents, right? They have to pay all the medical costs, all the, you know, basically every cost of the mother that's having their child adopted. Is that how that works?
Yeah.
Okay, so that's what we need to explain. Is that burden,
time frame.
Okay.
In the laws where, like, the living expenses that they're listing off is like transportation, utilities, clothing, food, housing, all of these things that the court decides how much into which of the living expenses the adoptive parents are forced to pay for the birth parents. Courts really have no say in that at all. Along with all the other expenses that are outside of that, they have to pay all of those as well. And my bill doesn't really touch any of those except for like the prenatal care. So taking all of those out, basically I'm going back to like the principles of it, you know, instituting individual responsibility and restoring individual liberties between the birth parent and the adoptive parent. Because parents are trying to...
You know what it is? It's when
yeah,
I talk. That's when your phone makes noise. It's really funny. There's like a delay on my voice. If I don't talk, I don't have a show, for me at least. So how is this... Do the adoptive parents, are they matched up before the baby is born? That's what it sounds like. I don't know how adoption works, at least not in Oklahoma.
Yeah, I think they make like agreements or contracts. The agreement basically is a contract, vice versa. I think a contract's more like a written thing.
Mm-hmm.
Not completely positive on that part. But it can be while the birth mother is pregnant or after the child is born. But either way, the adoptive parents can't actually adopt the child officially until after the birth parents sign the papers. And the birth parents until after the child is born. So either way, the child can't ever be the adoptive parents until they're at least born, which is why I put the prenatal costs in there, because I don't think they should pay for the prenatal costs for, like, the mother and the child whenever it's not theirs. or it can't be. And the mother, after the child is born, can still choose to keep the child if they want it.
Do they keep the money that was spent, or do they have to reimburse the adopted parents?
So, sorry.
That's okay.
I was
grab
trying
some water.
To find
him.
Yeah. Probably.
Yeah. I always have water when you talk on the radio. It's just, we all figured that out eventually. I got a big stainless steel mug. Every once in a while, I have to do the show. I have to hit, you know, play a commercial and run around and grab it. I think other folks should talk. I think you're hearing my voice coming through Brianna's phone.
Hey, Greg.
Anybody have any questions on this? Yeah. Josie, go ahead.
Yeah. I help a lot of parents, a lot of moms choose life in front of the abortion clinic for 11 years. And some of the moms, they were going to give up their babies for adoption, like this young girl was saying. Mm-hmm. And then the parents, hold on, I have to put my seatbelt on. The parents have to, you know, the people that were going to adopt the baby, they started paying all this type of bills. And one particular girl that I did a baby shower at the end, she changed her mind right before the baby was going to be born.
Uh-huh.
And this family were, like, devastated because they did everything to help this girl from Mississippi. And at the end, she chose to keep her baby. And I ended up giving her a baby shower because I was not planning to give a baby shower because she was going to give up the baby to this family. So this family bought everything for this baby. And it was very sad how this ended. And it happens to many, many, many parents. It's very sad.
See, this is where I think this bill comes from, is you got women who are either getting pregnant to get these things paid or find themselves pregnant and then are using this as a way to get everything, all kinds of expenses and money and everything else like that. Brianna, what's going on in Oklahoma? Go ahead, tell me.
So about your previous question, I'll answer that real quick on the reimbursements because that was actually a big problem for me whenever I was researching it because I couldn't find anything on reimbursements for, like, a newborn child. The only reimbursements I could really find was, like, through DHS up to $1,500, which isn't really that much considering the adoption cost and how much it actually
costs. Compared to $70,000, it's not, yeah.
Yeah, and usually newborn adoptions don't go through DHS. They go through adoption agencies and themselves. But if an adoptive child does not get adopted and the mother still gives it up, then the child will go into DHS, which is a whole other sort of problem. So my bill kind of starts at the beginning of this. And I actually tried to have some friends try and help me find anything on reimbursements, and they couldn't find anything either. So it's possible that it's out there and we just couldn't find it, but as far as we know, there's not any reimbursements other than the DHS one.
It is me. I can hear my voice coming through your phone. It's so funny. Amber, I think what we'll do is we'll pick up more constitutional stuff next time, but I think it's too fascinating with this bill. Pianchi, Josie, do you have any questions, or Amber have further comments on this?
I have to get off because I'm going to be on that loud I-10, so I'll continue listening. God bless you girls and continue the hard work you guys are doing, and I'm proud of you guys.
Thank you. Enjoy your day.
All right. Well, I'm going to toss it back to Amber. Do you want to explore the bill further? I think we pretty much covered it. And do you have more more Constitution stuff you want to talk about, or where would you like to go?
I did have a question for Brianna's bill. What happens when you adopt a child? I don't know if there's currently any laws against this. What happens when you adopt a child who's out of state? Like the birth parents live out of state, and y'all are a match, and you want to adopt the child. Can that even happen?
I mean, probably. I don't know enough about this, so I'm just going to give you what I can see about it. Don't take this word as fact, though, but I'm guessing whichever court, like if it's through Oklahoma, like if it's through an Oklahoma agency, through Oklahoma courts, then all the same rules apply of the Oklahoma laws. And then if it was in a different state, it would go to their laws if it was out of state. I guess it would just depend on the agency and the court. But I am not positive on this.
Okay. Interesting.
Well, there's always more research to be done on bills. See, the problem with bills is, you know, you write a bill, but there's already a bunch of existing laws, and you don't know where your bill is going to conflict with their bill. So a lot of the work that legislative staff does and committee staff does is to get, what's the word I'm trying to think of, concurrence, compliance, you know, so there's no conflict. So one law doesn't say one thing, another law says something different. There has to be consistency throughout the laws. And so you can write a bill, but part of the writing a bill is research between the other bills. This is why our format here at writeyourlaws.com and Action Radio is you have an introduction. You state why you want your bill. Then you post the old law and say, well, here's what the problem is. And then you post your amendments to that law, and it's like, here's the solution. And so that very simple formula allows people to understand why the bill is existing, where the law is bad, the current law, and how you're going to change it. And that's the formula we use here. It sounds like what you've done there, too, pretty much.
Brianna, yeah,
makes
I remember
sense?
One bill. From,
uh-huh.
Yes. I remember one bill from Patriot Academy. It made it to the floor. It didn't go through, though. And it was about lowering the age of majority to 18, right, instead of like 21 and 25.
For,
and all that. It was like,
well, it's already 18 to vote, so what place did you want to lower it? What other area?
It was like for,
it was not my bill. Go ahead, sorry.
It was like lowering the age for everything to 18. So to
okay.
drink, to drive, to smoke, to everything. Either lowering or raising it. You can do everything at 18.
Well, see, I would agree with that. Yeah.
The problem was the reason it got killed was a, I forgot what they called it. Something
of order.
Point of order. Because in the Constitution, I don't remember the actual wording of what it was, but in the Constitution, it was saying something about an age of 25. Amber, do you remember what it was?
Was the Texas Constitution. It was saying that in order to run for an office position, so like House of Representatives or Senate, there was an age requirement for that. So they would be essentially amending the Constitution, which they didn't lay out in their bill. So it was killed because of that.
See, I would disagree with that because running for office is a specific thing. I don't think, you know, if the age of majority, that sounds driving me crazy. It's getting louder. it's kind of weird. But 14th, yeah, move something around. Put your phone on a pillow or something, or something that might absorb sound. I bet you'll find that our show is playing somewhere on your phone. And it's on a delay, so that's why we're hearing my voice through your phone right now. Betcha.
It's possible.
Yeah. So look at your browser real quick. Do you have our broadcast episode on your browser, on your phone?
No. Like, the only thing I have open is this call, literally.
Okay, that's fine then. All right. Well, we got a little bit of time left. The only thing is we got to find a cure for that because it is kind of distracting me a bit here. But the 14th Amendment is very clear that the equal protection of the laws cannot be violated. And so if you can get some of your, you know, I would distinguish in terms of rights. And we have privileges and immunities. Running for office, I don't mind doing it on an age basis. I don't have a conflict with that, even though technically, you know, it's like 18-year-olds can't run for office, so I understand that. But the general rights of being able to, you know, sign a contract or get married or vote or drink or buy a gun or drive or any of that, well, driving is actually lower. But any of those things are rights of majority, and you can't take selective rights. You can't drink and own a gun at 21, vote at 18. You know, I soloed an airplane at 16. You know, so all these different ages for these different things, if it comes to rights or basically the privilege of citizenship, which would be voting, you know, they have to have the same age. That's how I see it. Brianna?
Yeah, I think that's how they were seeing it whenever they were creating the bill, too.
Uh-huh.
And there was one person who, whenever they went to committee, they had a bill like almost exactly like it, but it got killed, so they actually went to co-author that bill. And so I think that's a principle that a lot of people share that belief in.
Yeah, bills do get combined. That's a that's a common thing in the legislation, because you get a lot of times bills will be similar, and so they just kind of merge the language. That's very common. Okay. Well, we're kind of running out of time. Actually, we can go a few minutes longer. Amber, where should we go from here? What's our strategy as far as Patriot Academy, getting more folks involved, maybe forming an organization? Got any thoughts at this particular time, or you want to think about it and talk to me about it later?
Yeah, we might have to make another segment for Patriot Academy interviews.
Okay.
I don't know.
Let's get them in
contact.
Okay. Well, and for next time too, let's go over a little bit of Article 1 and just pick out the parts that are the most significant to you. Like I say, we don't need the nuts and bolts. You know, it takes 35 representatives to do whatever the thing, just the basic requirements, the administrative parts. But the big clauses, I think, the ones we should go over. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Okay.
That works.
All right. Brianna, closing comment? Go ahead, Brianna.
For Patriot Academy, about doing something with continuing it with your actual trying to publish it out, I guess, a different avenue. I don't know. I'm messing up my words here completely. But
okay.
I know that I've heard you doing partnerships with people, and I'm not sure how they work or anything, but maybe if you got in contact with one of the people there, maybe you could try and set up a partnership somehow. I'm not really sure how it would work, but just another idea.
No, it's a great idea. Amber, anything I should do? Any objection to me calling Patriot Academy directly and seeing if we can coordinate stuff? Or do you want to do that? Do you want to arrange it?
You're more than welcome to. I emailed Rich Green, so I'll see if he responds.
Okay, one more time, just because of the background noise again. What were you saying?
Yeah, so I just said I emailed Rick Green, so we'll see if he responds. You're more than welcome to call them to see if they wanted to do something.
Yeah.
Go for it.
Well, let me wait until he responds to you first, because I'd rather you follow this through, because you were there, you're the contact, and quite frankly, I'm busy enough. I got to coordinate a bunch of doctors and teach them how to be lobbyists. So this is I think that'd be a much better delegation of time. Brianna, what you want to do, I think, is go to, and Amber can help you with this, go to writeyourlaws.com, writeyourlaws, and post your bill there. You know, the latest form of it. And I'll put it up there, and it'll go to Citizen Bill Ideas, and then we can work on it, talk about it. I'll probably have you back to talk about it with, most likely with Amber, if I can arrange both of you, or you guys can arrange, you know, for some time, we can talk about that bill. And then let's get it to some Oklahoma legislators. Maybe we can get them calling in the show, too. You know, so both of you have incredible potential. I'll tell you right now, the potential of you two to be able to influence your entire generation is staggering. I don't even think you realize quite the impact you can have. But just the attitude, the internalization that you feel that not only, you know, should you have the option to write the laws, but you feel you have to. That is incredibly powerful, and just go with it. And any way that I can help you, you know, to work with this, to practice with this, use writeyourlaws.com, come back on the show, talk about it, bring friends. Do you guys, have you been able to share the show with friends? Do you have any reaction? And your folks, I haven't heard from them yet. I'm surprised your parents haven't called in. I guess they're letting you do this, but I'm happy to talk to them as well. They're welcome on the show too. But friends.
My parents listen every week. So.
What's that?
My parents listen every week, and my grandparents do too. So.
Yeah. Well, Amber's parents, you should be proud of her. She's doing an amazing job. And Brianna, your parents should be proud too. You guys are just incredible. But let's see how far we can take this. Now, here's a question for you. Does Patriot Academy partner with Turning Point, with Charlie Kirk's organization? He's more college, though. Are you guys connected at all, the two organizations?
I'm not sure about that. I know we had a lot of Turning Point and Daily Wire people come to Patriot Academy to speak, but I'm not sure exactly if they're, like, partners.
Okay, I'm going to try one more time. Brianna, is your phone resting on anything, or are you holding it?
I've actually changed that multiple times. Right now it's resting on a pillow.
Okay, good. Well, hopefully that should make it better. What I'm thinking is, Amber, tell me what you think of this. If we can get Patriot Academy and Turning Point connected, because Turning Point's more of a college organization. Patriot Academy, I'm guessing, is more high school, but not necessarily. but you can see the continuation. So then we work with both organizations in terms of legislation, and not only just writing it for a mock legislature, but writing actual legislation that goes from there to writeyourlaws.com. You know, and that the high school lobbyist becomes the college lobbyist, and you start bill writing, you start teaching people across the country, and then you guys might be giving speeches at Turning Point events pretty soon. You know, again, the potential is incredible. You know, tell if you're talking to Charlie Kirk, tell him I'd like to make a speech too. I want to talk to college kids. You know, because I want to teach them about this as well. Like I say, I'm the one that you know, God said, "Hey, Greg, I got an idea. I want you to run." I was like, "Oh, okay. You want me to do what? I want you to create a citizen legislature. Really? Okay." And here we are. You know, so I don't take credit for my ideas. I think they're definitely God inspired. Just because I don't think I would ever think of all the stuff that comes out of my head on a daily basis in terms of this show. So I like to give credit where credit's due. All right. We still get the noises drive me crazy, so I'm just going to let you two go. Groups or public things, anything you know that you want to announce, any events that are coming up, anything we should know? No personal information. I don't want folks getting that, but other than what we've already told them. Yeah. Closing comments?
Let's go, Brianna.
Yeah, okay. Brianna, any last comments? Did you have fun?
Yeah, I did. It was pretty neat. Okay. I can't believe I haven't actually heard of your show before, Amber. I'm sure I'd hear a bit before, but...
Well, I figured Amber would have told everybody she knows, but maybe not yet. Well, I'll talk to her about that. Well, the more you share, the more that the word gets out. And I think, you know, coming from you guys to your peers is going to be a lot more powerful than me doing it. And so this is good. So your parents, I hope, will share to all the other parents. They can do that and just get the word out and, you know, talk to media. You know, Brianna, once you write your bill for writeyourlaws.com, take it directly to your local media, your state media, start writing people and saying, look, I've got a real bill here from that I wrote, and I want this in the state legislature, and I've given it to these legislators and haven't heard back, and what do you think? And then go meet with them if you're close enough to the Oklahoma State Capitol. You know, go visit some people. Go visit your representative or visit their district office. You know, take it directly to them. Say, hey, you know, and then invite them on the show so we can talk about it. Potential is unlimited. It's up to you guys. Whatever your imagination, you know, can think of, you know, chances are I'm going to say, let's go for it. Let's try it. Sound good?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I could play some stuff because I totally blew through all my commercials, my announcements, my Santa Rosa Volunteers thing. So I'm going to play a few things here, all my announcements and things. I'll let you guys, you can listen in or not. It's up to you. But Amber and Brianna, thank you so much for being on the show today. I really appreciate it.
Awesome. We'll see you next week.
Sounds good. All right. And now, a word from... Greg Penglis here for my book, The Complete Guide to Flight Instruction. Everyone at some point in their life wants to learn how to fly. Few try. Even fewer go on to get a license. I believe a major reason for that is how we teach people how to fly. My book is designed to help you navigate the flight training system, but it's so much more than that. It really describes an entirely new way to teach flying. So if you've never tried a lesson or got discouraged in your training and quit for any reason, this book can help you. Don't be a rote pilot who just follows procedures. Be a thinking pilot who makes great decisions, who understands all the reasons why we do what we do. You can incorporate these principles into your own flight training at any time. The Complete Guide to Flight Instruction is featured on the Action Radio with Greg Penglis Facebook page and is available from Amazon.com. From addiction to achievement, that is the story of Mike Lindell. It started with MyPillow and now goes to MyCoffee. Action Radio is proud to be an affiliate of MyPillow. Our discount code is the same for all our product affiliates, WYL, which stands for Write Your Laws. MyPillow pillows are guaranteed the most comfortable pillow you'll ever own. Action Radio is guaranteed to be the most controversial show you will ever hear. Check out their products with our discount code at mypillow.com/WYL. That's mypillow.com/WYL. Or order now by calling 1-800-544-8939. That's 1-800-544-8939. Sleep well.
so you can wake up and hear Action Radio live. This is Greg Penglis for Strikeforce, your source for pure energy. Strikeforce is a concentrated energy drink that turns a half liter of your favorite beverage into an energy drink. You make your energy drink yourself. Action Radio is an affiliate of Strikeforce, so our listeners get a 20% discount. All you do is add our code, WYL, to the discount code window at checkout. WYL comes from our website, Write Your Laws. So, you can get your energy drink, a 20% discount, and help Action Radio change the relationship of we the people to our government. Not bad. Strikeforce is at StrikeforceEnergy.com. That's StrikeforceEnergy.com. Start your engine. Do you know your way around healthcare, insurance, pharmacies, surgery, alternative treatments and choices? I don't. Which is why I'm so glad I met Priscilla Romans, had her on Action Radio, and learned about health patient advocacy. She is the founder of Grace Care. And now as an affiliate of Grace Care, we are proud to offer through our discount code, WYL, which stands for Write Your Laws, a 10% discount. Grace Care saves you both time and money. They provide medical advocacy, consultation, advice, and recommendations nationwide. Their website is gracecare.com. That's G-R-A-I-T-H care.com. You can email them at gracecare.adm@gmail.com or call them at 469-864-7149. That's 469-864-7149. Grace Care, better health through better knowledge and advocacy. This is Greg Penglis with Founding Moments, sponsored by Santa Rosa Volunteers. For our first founding lesson, I want to start with the Declaration of Independence. Basic to any understanding of freedom and liberty are these words written by Thomas Jefferson. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. You will notice there is no reference to race, color, age, nationality, ethnic group, religion, or any of the common leftist categories they use to divide us. David Azarad, in his article for the Heritage Foundation, titled What the Constitution Really Says About Race and Slavery, December 28, 2015, says that no such concepts as race exist in the Constitution, Declaration of Independence, or any founding document. Therefore, since our founding documents have no such concept as race, it's kind of stupid of the left to say that we are founded on racism. The truth, folks, is that they simply made it up to suit their agenda of national sabotage and destruction, so that you would learn to hate your country. We hold these truths to be self-evident. No case need be made. It's plainly obvious. All men, meaning all people, are created equal. Granted, your status once you've come into the world is different from everyone else's because we all have different backgrounds, families, cultures, wealth, education, etc. We have differences, vast differences, but we are created equal. The whole concept of liberty, freedom, and rights are all dependent on keeping God above government. When governments believe they are gods, they will dispense rights as they see fit. When people believe they are gods, they will feel entitled to everything you have. True freedom comes only from the understanding and maintenance in government through control by the people that our rights are unalienable, that they cannot be separated from us, ever, because they came from a power higher than government, that we the people, also being a higher power, realize and maintain control over government because all just powers of government come from the consent of the governed. How we give our consent is why I created Action Radio. I'll be back next week with another edition of Founding Moments, sponsored by the Santa Rosa Volunteers. We'll be right back.
This is Greg Penglis. So what is Action Radio? It is a radio show with its own citizen legislature. That's you, the listener. It is a fully interactive system of listeners, expert guests, social media, writing bills, legislator input, bill submission, lobbying, and citizen action. Action Radio is the future of talk radio using all the available technology in one completely integrated new system. You are listening to Action Radio Online with Greg Penglis. The webpage for all Action Radio shows and podcasts is blogtalkradio.com/citizenaction. Please share our show with all your friends and family, both nationally and internationally. The guiding principle of Action Radio is this: we the people give our consent to be governed through writing the laws by which we are governed.